This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, this is the April 9th meeting of the Funding Methodology Committee here in Sacramento. I'll remind everyone it is a public meeting, so when you do speak, please identify yourself and try to keep your side conversations to a minimum. The first order of business would be to take roll, and I will start with that. Jake Chatters.
Here.
Judge Cope.
I'm here.
Judge Good.
Here.
Judge Holland.
Here.
Judge Kuhl.
Here.
Judge Lee.
Here.
Alan Carlson.
Here.
Sherry Carter.
Here.
Kimberly Flenner.
Here.
Deborah Norrie.
Here.
Mike Roddy.
Here.
Tim Turner.
Here.
Christina Volkers.
Here.
And Mary Beth Todd. For our meeting today, we have not had any public comments, any written comments, and we have not had any requests to speak today, so we will go right on to the minutes from our the previous meeting, which was September 17th, 2014. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Oops. I'll second.
And Judge Lee moves and Judge Cope seconds. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. The first item on the agenda is what I wanted to do is I think it's important that we do at least an annual review of our new workload funding model and make sure that we think it is working as it's intended to work, or whether or not there are any adjustments that we think need to be made to it. So I've asked Stephen Chang to walk us through some of the spreadsheets that are in the materials. They start on page 3 of our materials. I didn't know, Jake, if there's anything you want to say before we go into that.
No, I think the only thing to remind everybody here on the call is they're preliminary, so we don't know what the filing number is. It's been updated yet. So it doesn't have a new 3-year average included. It doesn't have what the final allocations might be from the budget. So just the usual cautionary. It's early, so we always go through this hesitation. We all want to know as administrators and judges and presiding judges, but on the flip side, the filings could drastically change based on whatever happened last. It should be drastic, but they could.
Marginal.
Substantial. Well, I don't know. And so
it's a 3-year
I don't know what the filings do in LA last year. So anyway, just that caveat.
Does anyone have any different ideas about how we walk through the spreadsheets today? Are you okay? We'll go through them and just kind of have a discussion. At the end, we'll open it up to concerns, comments. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay, great. So because folks don't look at this on a day-to-day basis or even a month-to-month basis, partly a refresher. I think there's going to be some new information that will help you to better have maybe a deeper understanding of how WAFM works. Also want to give you an update as to where we are at as of today through this fiscal year 14-15 in terms of the WAFM allocation adjustments and kind of the final tables will look prospectively look next 3 years out to see what might happen under certain assumptions. And they're pretty conservative assumptions. We're assuming no new funding in 16-17-18. There's a couple things I want to just go through with you on this table. This is just to remind folks that there's a difference between the historical WAFM, the workload-based allocation funding methodology-based allocation versus court beginning allocation for court operations. This is, yes, we're on table one right now. And you'll see that the beginning base allocation of 13-14 is $1.5 billion statewide compared to a lesser number, $1.44 billion. And the reason is, as just to remind folks, is that the beginning base includes funding for workload that was not captured by the resource assessment study, primarily security, as well as subordinate judicial officers' compensation. That's calculated separately along with judges' compensation and workload needs. So that's why we have to take that out of the beginning base. And then in addition to that adjustment, there's also some other funding that's not in court-based, but it's pretty stable year-to-year self-help funding on a reimbursement basis, replacement of 2% automation funding. It's a fixed amount, actually, every year. It comes out of civil filing fees. It's it's pretty much guaranteed, but we don't consider it part of your ongoing base because it's based on actual filings revenue. And this is actually based on actual filings paid, the record micrographics distribution, quotes it between $1 and $3 per specific or certain kinds of first paper filings. So again, there's a difference here. And the reason why I'm introducing this as well is that if you want to measure the progress made, and this I think it's we'll show in slides table 3 and 4, you can use different bases to compare it. So if you've grown by 500,000, you know, do you compare it against your base, your beginning base, or should you compare it to your historical base? For the most part, except for Shasta and Trinity, because they have a lot of funding in their security base for their marshals, if those are only two courts, it really makes a significant difference when you try to compare it between either the historical or the beginning base. For other courts, it really doesn't make that much of a difference. Still, I wanted to remind you there's a difference, and I will calculate it using both of these different bases. So this,
when you say historical loss of base, you're talking about the blend of loss of money and the historical base, or are you saying that's the WAFM number as if you're using 100% WAFM? I'm not quite sure if that column represents.
Okay, I guess maybe the way to explain it is at the beginning of 13-14, before there's any new funding being allocated towards using WAFM, this was a statewide allocation, including both from the trial court trust fund, mostly from the 90% trial court trust fund general fund, as well as the distribution from the needed critical needs account, $1.5 billion. But this money is not all WAFM related because not all the money here, the cost of this funding supports is not measured by WAFM. So you have to subtract out these amounts because security, subordinate judicial officers were not part of the resource assessment study workload.
It's a talking point.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Funding for your WAFM-related workload.
From the actual number.
Yeah, the money that we actually able to distribute given the appropriation.
Before WAFM.
And it's your comparison. Right. So what was your shares of that compared to what WAFM might?
According to WAFM.
As the workload.
Right.
The workload captured in the assessment study.
You still look confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought I had it until I got the qualification.
So just for clarification, isn't the historical base the percentage that court had before we applied WAFM? Yeah. So take WAFM out. It's okay. Your historical base. It was your percentage of the total funding that was applied from 2004 or whenever it was, that was your historical share.
Okay.
Yep. Mike?
Isn't it, I mean, I'm heading down the same path, but isn't it really the 2012-2013 base?
Yeah.
Before WAFM.
Before WAFM.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So a historical base.
But the
I mean, maybe that's an oversimplistic view, but, you know, if that's 13-14, in a sense, that's 12-13 before WAFM. I've always just, in my spreadsheets, I just call it 12-13 because it was before we
started it.
Yeah.
The difference is, and I think that point that, let's use SJOs. So SJOs is part of the beginning base on the far right, which would have been in your funding, but it's not in the workload that is calculated by the funding model. So that has to come out. So that funding, we don't count that funding when you're doing what is
distributions
that?
And anything like that. Anything to the right, columns 2 through 7 are not part of anything that would be subject to the redistribution, whereas column 1 is, because it is the workload.
And the reason, to clarify, the reason is because they each have their own funding methodology. You know, SJOs have their own formula that council has approved, as has security and some of the others. So that's the reason.
So to Mike's definition, it really would be that FAR column, right? The way Mike's saying 12-13 before WAFM.
No, that was the first year of WAFM.
Right? Right. So wouldn't it 1.5 be the right number for that? Right, Jake? Because you can call that other stuff out.
The right number to do what?
Yeah.
No, you start with 12-13 and you take all that out, and that's where you start 13-14.
Which was the first year under WAFM. So if you want to say the starting point was point one, the far left column. That's where we started this whole discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
But we had to take columns 2 through 7 out to do an after.
As we move forward, we do these various adjustments, but the starting point was the genesis, or whatever you want to call it.
Column 1 is the only amount that we considered for WAFM, correct? The historical amount. Yeah.
to just ask a couple of quick questions. So the programs like the Canadian interpreter, they're not in there because they're separately funded, is that correct?
Right.
That's right.
And then on the unfunded 12-13 benefits, if you can refresh my memory, was that because those were one-time funds? Why is that backed up?
Actually, that was initially allocated on an ongoing basis by the council, but then knowing that probably in hopes that we would get general fund monies restored, this year.
Okay.
So at that time, we included as part of the beginning base. So you'll see it in a separate spreadsheet, too. We put it in.
Yeah, I do keep seeing it, and I couldn't recall why that was.
We had to fund it. That's why we had the budget, the chocolate trust fund.
Okay.
Because we had to fund $1 of the microstate.
Alan?
Yeah, that and this is going to come up again. We've had unfunded stuff every year on benefits. And how are we taking that into account or not taking it into account? Because it has a very disparate impact on the courts. And one of my concerns is WAFM says we use actual benefits. But, in fact, unless we start taking this into account, we don't use actual benefits. We use some portion of that that got funded or not funded, in a sense.
WAFM need... is based on.
Yeah.
We'll leave back to that. Right. There's different ways.
Because the benefit needs
are allocated differently than the rest of the base.
But if we're going to be consistent with WAFM, we've got to be looking at how we're dealing with unfunded benefits. Because we're not consistent with WAFM if we don't deal with it.
Should we talk about that?
When
we get to the
open. It comes up in table 3, I think it is.
All right. Last point, it's already been mentioned, but this is the number that, this is the allocation that's reallocated, that's subject to the phases. So it's 50%, it's 50% of this number. This year is 15%, it's 50% of this number, about $150 million or so. And the other thing is that this is fixed in that each course percentage, that's your historical percentage. That we compare them to current math and need percentage. We'll get into that, but this is fixed. This doesn't change. This will never change until all the monies are reallocated and we can ignore that number. Okay, so let's move to table 2. So what this table shows are all the WAFM adjustments that have taken place in 14, 15 this year. Gives you the cumulative, gives you an estimate for 15, 16. Some people already know that we're still using 90.06. You know, the Department of Finance has adjusted upwards to 90.6 million, but we're still using this January number in the government's budget. And it gives you the cumulative total through 15, 16, and then I'm going to walk through this. I'm just going to give an overview, a quick overview, and then we're going to show you what the impact has been on each court's allocation. So let's start with 13-14. You remember this represents the total net reallocation allocation. So it's a 10% phase-in, going new, which reallocates 60, additional 60 above the 10%. And then reallocate to 60 million. So the net change is 60 million. And you'll see, you can see it on your chart, the cells that are shaded in pink or red, there are four courts that in 13-14 had a negative adjustment. They had a reduction, net reduction to their allocation in 13-14. And everyone else has had a zero positive reduction. Going to 14-15.
And that's because the impact of the redistribution was greater than their share of the new money.
Right.
A combination
correct.
Of the first phase of redistribution and the $60 million matching
yep.
added up to a greater negative than their share of the ad.
Right.
So every court has a column that shows an ad. It's the fact that there are negatives where
bigger. Yeah.
Are
yeah.
bigger. But so understand that some people say, I didn't get any new money. There are sort of steps. There's a plus column of the new money, but it's smaller than the value of the redistributions of the matching money that went with it and the fact that we just have this plan. So absent the new money, there would be courts with many more with minuses than there are now. So there is a benefit of the 60 million, the 86, right. 90, and that they do help offset the negatives. Because if Brian reminded us, this was a zero-sum game. If there was no new money, the losses would have been larger on the ones with the reallocation.
Right. And I will show you the math, which I'm sure is everyone's favorite subject in high school. I will show you the math. It will be very intuitive. You'll see. It will be very intuitive and helpful, I think. The one thing on this chart also is, just remember, is that, remember, the cluster one courts were exempt. So this would have looked different if the cluster one courts hadn't been exempt from the reallocation, right?
Stephen, I think there was a provision that said that if all new money, we reallocate an equal amount.
Mm-hmm.
So when it says lawful at 10% and 60 million, is that reallocating 60 million or 120 million?
Okay, so I don't have the math exactly. So the way it works is that, first of all, you do the reallocation of 10% of the 1.4 billion. So reallocate that. So that's net zero statewide. So some courts get a increase, some courts get a reduction based on their share, whether or not their WAFM percentage. And also you'll see them in table 4, whether their WAFM meet percentage is greater than their historical percentage. So that's the first calculation. And that's a net zero statewide. Then of the 60 million, the council policy is to reallocate 60 million, the old money, for net zero statewide. So again, you reallocate. So 10% plus the 60 million is a total reallocation. So that first year, 200 million was reallocated. 10% of 1.4 billion plus 60 million. And then the 60 million then gets reallocated strictly based on the WAFM need.
And that's when you allocated strictly based.
Yep.
Not reallocated.
Not reallocated.
That's all a positive.
That's all positive for every court. And so when you add it all together, you get 16 things statewide. So courts have positive and
So it does take those things.
So the first column, column A, though, does that reflect both the 10% reallocation plus the 60 million, the allocation of the 60 million?
It's all three pieces. Because there was new money was 60. The question was, why is it 60? Because the first 10% is distribution of existing money.
Okay.
60 million is the existing money. And then the new 60, that's why. Yeah.
All right. So then in 14-15, look at column B, we had 86.3 million in new funding. And then we went to WAFM at 15%. So this reflects the net incremental allocation. So and this year, all the cluster one courts were included as part of the reallocation because of some new features that were adopted, some changes made to the methodology. I won't go into all of them, but one of them was a funding floor adjustment. There's a funding floor of $750,000, which really applies just to two courts. The graduated funding floor, three tiers of graduated funding floor levels up to about $1.9 million. So the cumulative adjustments this year actually is $146 million statewide. And you'll see that actually four courts still had a negative adjustment. So through 14-15, as adjustment 13-14 plus adjustment 14-15, four courts had a cumulative reduction, and everyone had a positive. Now, that's not necessarily a good thing. This doesn't, just because you get money doesn't mean that your costs haven't increased above what your increase was. So just bear that in mind as well.
Okay.
So
by this point, to Jessica's question before, in 14-15 there was 15% of the historical base of $1.4 billion, roughly $210 million, right, would have been just reallocated. And then you have 86 million plus 60 million for another 146 million. So now we're at 350 million reallocated within the branch, and then there, which would be a net zero. And then there was 146 million of new money that year that was just allocated to everybody. So those were all net positives of the 146 million, but there was still the 300 or so million that was reallocated amongst everybody out of that base. Sorry, Steve, my numbers are roughly accurate.
And just another note, as you know, every year we adjust it based on the new filing. So this year it changed. So this is not static allocation. It depends on the change of the added 3 years of filing.
Okay.
So then we just go to 15, 16, and so next year we're looking at the phasing up to 30%, and this is net zero sum allocation. So some courts get an increase, some courts receive a reduction. We're still using a 90.06 number, so this is the allocation and reallocation of that. Just a net statewide increase of 90.06. This is an estimate of funding for adjustment. So by the end of next year, we would have received a total of $236 million in new funding. We would have reallocated that on top of the 30% historical reallocation. I'll show you the numbers too. That's in, I think, table 3 or 4. I'll show you the percentage of the historical base will have been reallocated. And this is what's most important is next four columns. So what this shows here, if you look at the very bottom, the total column K, the 15.8 million. So if you compare it to the beginning base, and then we'll also compare it to the historical base. But if you look at the beginning base in 2014, $236 million is a 15.8% increase on top of that.
Say that again.
So $236 million is an increase of 15.8% over the $1.5 billion. So we received over a three-year period a 15% increase.
So there's $1.4 billion. No.
Talking about the historical base that we
missed.
Is that what you're talking about?
All funds.
Right. You can just look at the chart. I'm looking at this number here. So this is 15.8.
So look at column.
Yeah, I got it.
Right.
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Well, column J.
Okay.
So I over J.
Yeah, I over J. Yeah.
15.8.
Right.
So if we allocated the 236 on a pro rata basis based on each court share, every court would have got 15.8%.
Right.
But you'll see that courts didn't because of the WAFM. So the maximum change for one court was 41% compared to their beginning base. So they got a 40% for 13-14 base. That was the maximum increase.
I bet it was for a maximum.
Some courts, minimum, the maximum, actually the maximum reduction was 11%. So there were, and the average was 14.3.
But that's against the one that's against the base that includes the SGOs and the security.
That's right.
Where we build WAFM base dollars, that far right comments.
Right. And just say it doesn't make that much of a difference except for Shaft and Trinity. It's only the percentage change. And the maximum number doesn't work. So this shows you the impact through what we're estimating will be impact through 15-16.
Any questions or comments on this?
Anybody who has a positive the relationship of the neg, the man, I'm trying to remember how it hit this, the Jake said it. There was a certain growth, but if you got less than that, you was offset because of your reallocation. So just the interplay of the negatives and the positives. Like Stephen said, if it was all just positive, everybody would have gotten 16.4, so just added it. Pro rata, but the impact of having net negatives are smaller than the average growth. That's when you see the impact of the change in the allocation methodology. That's what I'm trying to get. So in the historical way, we just would have given it out pro rata, and everybody would have grown the same, but from bases that were severely
underfunding. The last point, if you look in column I, if you count up the number of shaded cells, you count up 6. That means 6 courts were projecting to have a cumulative negative. By the end of 15-16, when you add up all their adjustments from 13-14, there'd be 6 courts with a cumulative negative adjustment. That's an increase of 2 courts. This year is 4, or by 6. And you'll see that the number of courts that would have negative depends on a couple of factors. It depends on which year you are in the phase, and it also depends on how much money that's received. And it depends on, also you'll see that your reallocation ratio. The higher your ratio is, then the more likely you're going to get a reduction because there's not going to be enough new money coming in to offset it. And I'll go over that in the next slide or two.
And Stephen, you could also add or subtract courts based on if the filing data changed significantly. If a court, for example, sustained its filing level while every other court drop the number of filings. That, so there is that relative interplay as well, right?
Right.
But we don't know that number yet because we don't have final smoothing for the 3 years that are going to be applied to this year, correct?
Right. I think we're expecting to have that in this May.
We are the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee will be meeting the week of the 10th of May, returning to the meeting. There are, at this point, there are still some courses not submitted in May. But Astral is on that day too. That's the first time that we are encouraging. We encourage the goal rarely, but nevertheless, it is generally an issue of timing.
Can we tell them? We go with the lowest.
But we hope to have something, if not final, that at least there's a preliminary by that fall.
If you could check one page in that table two, please.
Sure.
If you look at SISCU. Okay, in column I, it shows a negative cumulative adjustment of 384. But if you look at the columns J and L, oh no, J and L is still 15 and 14. I see, okay. I wasn't about how that hasn't changed that much, but so if you showed their base for 15-16, would it be $384,000 less?
It would be less. 3.257. Depending on what you want to, if you want to look at their historical, their current Waltham base, yet you would subtract it from this number.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
There, and I think it's on the next table. This number would not be column J. Their beginning base in 1450 is not column J minus 1516 minus column I. Because there's other new funding that we're receiving for benefits for other areas that increase your base. So you would see the base funding might be column L minus column I, because you're taking out some of those not. But I think that's what Stephen has on the next chart to try and get into that. That there are, we are getting money in for benefits, for example, to Alan's point.
Right.
We factor into how is that applying against your funding need, but it isn't, because it isn't going to non. Because it's a designated funding source, we don't put it in for reallocation for long. Exactly.
Stephen, can you explain to me what column M is on this table? Table 2?
Column M?
Yep.
So that is the percentage when you divide what's in column I, which is the total new funding adjustment received for 15-16 divided by the historical Waltham base number in column L.
So this is cumulative adjustment since Waltham began through 1560?
Just for the money subject to Waltham.
So NUBA okay. At the bottom, against the base that is that 12-13 concept, we went up 10%. So their base was 3.225 million and they got 343,000. That's how much, compared to where they started, their base has grown by 10%. So it's a good sense of relative change, because $20 million on a small budget proportionally may feel the same. You just have to give it relative change, and that's what that is trying to say.
So it looks like the biggest negative adjustment was SISCU at 11.8, and then the biggest positive adjustment occurred.
And that's including just the Waltham changes plus the
And the point is if you were to look at, and I think Stephen will have that, what their historical base was and what Waltham will suggest that they had the biggest disparity.
Yeah.
So they would be brought up
faster.
I think Jake gave me a good segue to table 3. A will be familiar to you by now. Hopefully, 1.5 billion. This is a different. And what this table is showing you is all the actual adjustments to port-based allocation, just so you know what those were, but then you can go back and tie your numbers to what your finance staff should have. Numbers are repetitive. You'll see the truly LAFM adjustment, 13-14, unfunded benefit, SJO conversion. So there's a program whereby if you have an SJO that's designated by, I think, the executive of the planning committee to be converted to a judgeship. So when that position is not only converted to a judgeship but actually filled, then that's actually funded because it's not a funded program. So we reduced reports allocation by the average cost of a judge in that year, and we shifted over to the appropriation that actually pays for the compensation of Superior Court judges out of the trial court trust and called Program 4525, Compensation of Superior Court Judges. And I think there's what the program 16 statute, Budget Act language allows 16 conversions every year.
Can I stop you there for a second? I want to make sure I understand. So if I take an SJO position and convert it to a judgeship, the money that would be deducted from my budget is the cost of the judgeship, not the cost of the SJO I'm losing.
That's right.
Okay.
Because we're moving that cost because it's not funded, so we have to pay for
right,
it.
Right, okay. So essentially, it's that adjustment is sort of being balanced on the court's budget, maybe disproportionately to the cost that we used to have that full-time SJO.
The commissioner cost.
Yeah, I thought it was I'm confused when you said that because I thought that I was just going to lose
the
court cost of a commissioner, not the full vote cost of a judge, which is kind of expensive.
Yeah, court shouldn't be paying the cost of
the judge. The reason why we do part of it is because actually the cost of the commissioner is generally higher than the cost of the judge. Because the only transfer the cost of a judge that's paid out of the trial court trust fund, their retirement benefits are paid out of the general fund. So actually, for most courts, they actually benefit because your cost of the SJO, you pay the full retirement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But for the judgeship, what we transfer, you don't. Because because that's not a cost of the trial court trust fund.
So the benefit, all you're transferring is the salary of the judgeship, not the salary plus benefits minus retirement?
What we transfer is what is paid out of the trial court trust fund, which is compensation, health, and that's basically health, dental, life insurance, vision.
Is it always the same number, regardless of what court it's coming out? I mean, because you're getting the same judge number, judge dollars, men or all.
Yeah, we take the average, statewide average. The compensation is the same, right? Except for your presiding judge. And the benefits, we take the statewide average.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
Well, how come the numbers are different then? I don't get it.
It depends on when the judgeship has been appointed.
Yes.
So, you can't just divide it by the number because if they're appointed in February, it would be different than November.
And you also don't know how many SJO conversions are included.
Right.
Right. You can tell there's just a few courts with one, right?
Presumably, yeah.
Well, I hope so. Moran. Yeah. Actually, we converted two, but it was mid-year, so that's why it looks like one.
Right. Right.
All right, so then we're going to 14-15, 15%, 86.3. This is this year. Funding for adjustment. The fund benefits as allocated by the council was taken out because it's actually provided through a general fund, actually trial court trust this year, for $41 million. This just reminds you two things on this, that the WAF fund allocation rate includes not only the new funding, 60.3, and the projected, this is only through 14.6, actually over here, 9.6. Remember, the council would allocate based on any new funding for general court operations, not for specific costs, would be included as part, would be allocated by WAFM, and obviously should be part of the WAFM base. The benefits are actually part of the WAFM calculation. However, it's not allocated based on WAFM. It's not WAFM. It's not reallocated based on WAFM. You get it based on your actual cost change for that particular year. Now, at some point in time, once we get fully funded, that's all going to change because then that actually counts towards our actual funding need. And so that's something we don't have to address right anytime soon, but at some point in time, just remember, that actually is part of the funding that's included as your WAFM need. contingent, actual allocation.
Calculation going forward is our actual cost, right. but what he's saying is right now we're not getting our whole cost.
Right.
So they're not allocating under WACOM. They're, you know, what did we agree on, 75% last year or something of what people's increases were they got, and they're just short that other amount. That's one of my concerns is that's disproportionate when you just go by 75%.
If we
eventually get to full funding, then all that will have been funded, then it washes out and we go to straight block.
I just have two quick questions, I hope. So in the unfunded 12-13 benefit column, I see San Francisco has neither a positive nor a negative number. Like no change. So does that mean that their benefit amount did not change at all? Because, you know, there are ports that had, you know, greater benefit costs and a few ports that have fewer benefit costs.
But San Francisco has no benefit costs.
So what is...
They have no unfunded benefit costs.
Right. But it's sort of like, what does that mean? I'm trying to theoretically figure out...
What do the negative benefits mean? Because usually if we saw savings in our benefits, we were applying it somewhere else.
So column C and column G are identical.
Right.
So I think Stephen's just trying to show that in 13-14, that funding came from the trial court trust fund, right?
Okay.
And so then in 14-15, that was taken out of the trial court trust fund allocation, but then included in column H, which was 13-14 and 14.
Okay. You know, if you don't have the answer, that it's okay. I mean, I don't expect you to have, you know, encyclopedic memory about what happened. Why there's no, it's just an interesting.
Down the street, they didn't have an increase. And it could be.
Yeah, but if you didn't have an increase and you had a decrease, it still shows up in this chart as a positive or a negative number. So if I reported $50,000 last year, my number went down to 45. That would be negative 5,000.
I'm assuming it's exactly that.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Patrick Ballard, if you're listening, can you email Colin Simpson? But yeah, I don't know.
Colin, can you email Patrick?
Yeah.
And ask him.
Yeah, it's interesting that
it probably makes no difference, but I mean, it's just an interesting, you know, if we're looking to make sure that I'm worried, like what Leah Rose Goodwin just told us, that there are courts that may not have reported, and so therefore they got left kind of out of the math, which may have an impact on how, since all of these things are done pro rata, on how the costs are shared and spread among the remaining courts that did report.
So if a court doesn't report, what responsibility do we have?
Exactly. That's the baseline question. I'm sure that's one of the things that the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee is going to have to grapple with if they, of course, don't report data.
But, you know, Kim, this whole issue would have gone back in 12-13.
Yeah.
In the original reporting year.
Right.
It is what it is. It's just been carried forward.
I just don't worry about it.
The whole.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I feel better. Smart people have told me how to feel about this.
Alan Carlson.
Wait a minute.
I'm talking about Sherry life, not you.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's hard to help. I said, this was funny. Fall for trust and fund balance. We didn't have fund balance. You know, we had to take it out, but we did because we got new general fund, additional new money. Now, to answer your question, Doug, actually, there were some savings that year. So you see Santa Barbara net savings, you know, whether retirement or their health benefit contributions actually went down by that amount. So that may be a bit of negative.
But I thought, just having a brain blip, but I thought if we experienced savings with our health benefits and whatnot, we could reapply that. I mean, that's what we were all doing when we were going through all of our
back in the 90s.
Well, in your health savings account issues.
The J-Corp system we
have. You know, the employer health savings accounts, but not when the rates go down.
Yeah, right.
I haven't had a rate go down, so I guess that's
okay. So those are the points I want to make about benefits. The other point in one of the on agenda items is that, remember, because of the revenue shortfall, we've also had to take a reduction. This year, it was a one-time reduction, 22.7, but we're assuming that the council's going to have to allocate that. It's how they actually allocate that short means, depending on what the advisory committee is going to recommend. But we want to include that because I think most people were probably taking this into consideration. Our revenues are continuing to go down. So that allocation, unless it's being restored, and therefore we can address whether or not what this prospect of it being restored will be, courts will have to take that reduction again.
How did you do the allocation, Stephen, for the 22.7?
So we used the method of the two.
Well, council ultimately was the one that
right.
allocated.
We had several meetings and had.
We told them not to allocate it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
So this is only that one year.
Okay. And now because we did, they said we got operationalized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
they just said they were going to give it to us. Don't make an assumption that because we did it that. I know.
Yeah.
They told you that they were never going to give it to
right.
us ever.
And that's what I said, and folks said, no, let's fight for it. Because they just couldn't afford the full cost of everything. It was benefits. It was the 5% and the $30 million. And as they said, there's only so much that they were going to put towards the judicial branch, and that was the slice and the dice of it. And so if they would have given us the full amount over here, they would have knocked down the 5% to 2.5% and phased it into 5%. It was a zero-sum game.
Right.
And we were continuing to advocate.
So, but what was the – that would have been better, though, I guess, Lacko.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because our concern, and this will come up in the next agenda item, I think, when we talk about, well, what does this mean, ongoing? Because this says this assumes ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you're saying, just for illustration purposes, Stephen, that was a one-time allocation. We're going to have to make recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
But it hopefully create a perception of a million coming.
Right.
But it wasn't actually 80 million.
Okay. So when we portray the amounts of cuts to the branch, to the trial courts, we deduct this, we deduct the unfunded benefits to say, because they can talk about all the good that they did in the budget and the $180 million that they did, and we'd say, no, the real net allocated cuts are still higher than you would say because you had two major unfunded costs for us.
But to Earl's point, I mean, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee ultimately recommended not to allocate it.
Right.
So you were saying you expect it to be permanent, but under the idea that it could be, maybe it could be one time in advocacy efforts.
Right, and we did submit the DCP for current year money and budget year money, and they continue to not fund the 22, but they provided the 19.8 for 15-16 in our submitted for our revenue update, maybe to the like 13-15 for continued erosion in the traffic trust and revenues.
And they're agreeable to picking that up, so.
So we see it in the mayor revision, but they did the first part in the governor's budget. We would hope that they would continue that in the budget year.
But we still have the 22.7.
Correct.
Could you remind us how the 22.7 was allocated for this fiscal year? It was not allocated on the basis of Waltham, as
right. It was done differently. It was based on the methodology that is used for the 2% holdback, which takes a base amount, deducts things like security so that people get on the same footing, and it's the blended amount of the base allocation at the time. So it would be...
That's the historical percentage. And the theory was we did it that way because it was a reduction in it. That's correct.
Right. And there was debate at the time of the Budget Advisory Committee about should it be netted against the new money, so should the 86 be reduced down. So that's, but it was one time to be revisited because the council meeting, the members of the legislature were saying it would not be wise to allocate money to the budget.
And we're going to end up revisiting it.
Yeah. Unless it was a one time.
Well, it's going to be permanent, not.
Yeah, so might as well. Has Martin renewed that conversation with him after January? About this 22.7, as opposed to the other shortfall.
Every time we talk about our deepening problem with the trust fund, we remind them this is on top of an unfunded 22.7 that the trial courts have done. So,
and their reaction is?
Okay.
We're working on the future, not on the past.
How rude.
I have an answer to a question about why Sam was.
Oh, okay.
Mike says that there were no changes.
Oh, wow.
That's
the explanation.
Well,
amazing.
It wasn't that we didn't submit the information.
No, that was not the case. I know that for sure.
That's fine.
Excellent. All right, should I continue?
Yeah.
All right, so we've seen columns L and M and N. Column O and P are not current numbers based on what the advisory committee approved as the allocations from the benefits based on the recommendations from the subcommittee at the approved at the March 23rd meeting. These are for illustrative purposes only. So, but we are going to get new benefits money. So we're going to get some benefits for cost changes for 14-15. We're going to get some money restored from the reduction of the $22 million that was this year. We're going to get back. This is $10 million, but we're right now projecting to get about $13 million. And so the bottom line column S and T is if you look at the cumulative adjustments, I'm going to exclude the SJL conversion. So just including Lapham adjustments, the reallocations, the new funding of $236 million, you'll see that there are five courts that will have a cumulative negative. This will be consistent with the previous table. Actually, this is the total adjustment. Sorry, so that's not consistent with the information. So there are five courts that have a cumulative negative adjustment. And if you just look at the cumulative Lapham adjustment, six courts. And the reason why is that...
So it went from four to six to six.
So there's five courts that have a cumulative negative adjustment. If you look at Lapham plus benefits, if you just look at Lapham, it's six courts. And I hate to pick on San Francisco, but San Francisco is and I live in San, I was born and raised in San Francisco, so I can do that. You'll see that they have a positive, and that's because their benefit cost changes exceeded their negative by $1 million. And just again, to reiterate, it's not free money for San Francisco that they have. It's not $1 million of free money that they have. The benefit cost changes are to address cost increases.
Sure. No, we get it.
Right, so I just wanted to make that point.
You know, actually, I just want to point something out.
Sure.
Side conversation. So in column L, in this sheet, it's highlighted, pink, red, I don't know what color that is, if it's a negative. And this goes back to Joshua's comment before, that column L is the reallocation, right? And that's just reallocation, 30%. So barring any new money, there would be 35 courts that would go down 23.
Did you
count? I did.
Okay.
23 that would go up. You can check
that. Okay.
But then we have the new money that comes in, which is why when you get to the right on the total adjustment, it's not shaded, but it ends up being that's a six, right? And column Q.
There are a few courts that do get a negative.
Four. So there are 35 that are red in column L, but because there's additional money coming in, by the time you get to Q, there's only four that have a negative, although they're not highlighted in red. But.
Yeah, and just because it's positive doesn't mean it's nearly covering columns.
Okay.
I know Alan will say it. I'll say it for him. And Mike will say it without saying because you know Alan will say it. But it's all relative. So if you were to put this against the base and see the shares, you know, Santa Clara is like less than 0.5%, even if it's positive.
Even though costs are growing for them, it's a relative negative, even though you don't see it
right
crunchy.
All right, now we'll get to the fun part. Table 4. Column A's. Historical Lapham base, the 1.4 million. Column B is new. This is the current Lapham need. This is the funding that's estimated by Lapham to be that's needed by the court to meet all its work that is associated with its filings, both principal and $2.4 billion. So at that point in time, the current need versus historical base, the difference is about $1 billion. That's not the current gap that we are experiencing because we've gotten new funding since then, right? But that, if you compare it to the historical base, the gap was $1 billion. The current gap is about $600 million. And that assumes critically that $200 million of what we call local fees that enforced by statute but are not remitted to the state fund are not associated with the workload that's measured by Lapham. And that's part of your work plan. Those are what we identified as revenues that need further analysis to determine whether or not they are or not related. This is 2.4. Okay. So right now we're saying that the total gap is about $600 million. Column B2 indicates whether or not the historical allocation is greater than the Lapham need, and you'll see that there are a number of courts, there's five courts, I believe, five courts whose historical base is higher than the Lapham need. and there's five of those. You'll see that in the further chart that there's some quartz base that has gone down because of reductions, and we'll go into that, but at that point in time, it's... The other thing to note is...
I think, Stephen, that we should make that point, right? So there are, under the WAFA model, there were five quartz that said that their need was less than what they had. Meant that there were 53. So, I mean, again, just back to our point that we keep saying that this isn't an issue of people being overfunded to a large degree, right? We're talking that there are courts that went down. So Marin and San Francisco, or, you know, San Francisco ultimately has a negative through Waltham, but this doesn't say that they had more money than they needed, right? They still needed more money than they had at the time. And then also with the five, the first three of those, the Alpine, Sierra, and MODOC will come up later, where they end up getting impacted by the funding floor because they're so small. And then Siskiyou and Plumas are sitting right on the edge of that.
Of the funding floor,
which is why poor Debbie, even though she's not very much in these meetings. Anyway, so they're right on the edge of that floor that we created. Well,
I know people will hit the floor by the last year of the Washington implementation.
So, but again, it's five. So other than that, all courts needed more money than they had before.
All right. Column C is a straight calculation. It divides each court's historical base by the statewide. So for current, it's the 28 million divided by 1.4 gets you 2%.
So for what year?
For the historical
beginning.
Base.
Okay, I want to make sure.
Calculated 14.50.
Column D is basically column B. Each court's WAF can be divided by the statewide need. For current, it's 68.7 million divided by the 2.4.
And again, the current WAFM need as in B, or the original WAFM need as in 13-14?
The current need,
which has been updated in B.
Right.
Got it. Yeah.
And so I mentioned earlier the reallocation ratio. So if you divide D by E, you'll get this percentage. And what this tells you is if you are greater than 1
by C?
No, not
D by C?
That would be circular.
It is D by C.
I think it's at the top column.
It is Excel.
Yeah.
All right.
So it should say D divided by C.
So if your reallocation ratio is less than 1, and there are 35 courts in that situation, based on a local reallocation of funding, your court gets a reduction. You lose money. If your ratio is greater than 1, you gain money. And the way it works, and this is actually, it works out nicely, is, well, not if your court gets a reduction, but if the math works out nicely, what this number represents is 37%, that's the ratio. So for each dollar that is reallocated, that court gets back 37 cents. Or it loses, gets reduced by 63 cents. That's why this is a helpful and relevant ratio. So for each dollar that's reallocated, so they give an Alpine, gives up a dollar. So reallocate, give me back my reallocation. They get back 37 cents. They've lost. They've been reduced by 63 cents.
Because that Alpine doesn't, because then maybe pick a different one.
But the opposite extreme for current, for every dollar that's relative, they get back $1.42.
Okay.
They gain 42 cents. On the
and they get $1.42 for every new dollar out of it.
No,
we can. Okay. I want to make that point, because there's a difference
right
between that.
Right. So for every dollar, they get your share. At least the 2.84%.
It's not a ratio.
Right.
That way it's just a straight number.
Right.
2.84% of every dollar they get.
So depending on your ratio, the more severe it is, either up or down, it determines whether or not overall you're going to get a reduction. And also, again, it depends on how much new funding is introduced or infused every year.
So right in the middle, for example, Contra Costa, for every dollar they put in, they get a dollar and a cent back.
That's right. So the number of courts in this mid-range where they really don't have, there's not a huge impact one way or the other in terms of WAF, in terms of reallocation. They might get back a few cents or lose a few cents, but it doesn't really make, they basically get their WAF from share of new funding. If there's new funding, if there's no new funding, they would just stay the same. But because of new funding, they actually get their whole WAF from percentage.
Hey, no negatives on reallocation and the percentage reallocation.
So you can see that there's a direct relationship between a low ratio and the cumulative adjustment being negative. So these are the cords that will have a negative cumulative adjustment by the end of 15-16, assuming that it's 90.06 million, and it also includes the funding floor. And it's because of their ratio. Now, there are three cords that, as Jacob mentioned, I do not include any of this. Actually, I do not include the funding floor, just for illustrative purposes. But with the funding floor, these cords will not have a negative adjustment. Well, certainly Alpine and CIR would not, because they're guaranteed an absolute floor. So they're going to have zero. For MoDOT, this will be much less, because they're going to get, I don't think they're going to get the whole 107,000, I can't remember, but it's going to be mitigated. Because Plumas and Marin, or Siskiyou and Plumas don't quite qualify for a funding floor, they will get this cumulative adjustment. And then Marin and these four courts are going to get a negative adjustment unless, this is column I, there's beyond the 5.6 million, we're going to get this amount of amount of new funding. So for example, San Benito, right now, if the new funding was 90.06, they would have a cumulative adjustment of negative 22,000. If we get another 29 million in new funding, that will take them to zero. For Marine, it would take $488 million for them to get to zero. Then it's a combination of their
for
ratio.
The branch. 488
for the branch.
Right, not for me. That'd be wow.
And then you can see for 16 and 17, we're just assuming that there's no funding, and if the reduction, the reallocation goes to 40%, you can see a number of new courts would go to negative. And this tells you how much new money, over and above the 90.6 plus the 56.3 and the 16 million would be needed to get them to a zero. Again, if you go to 50% and again no new funding, another two courts would also go to negative in terms of the cumulative adjustment. And again, it's driven largely by the reduction ratio, the reallocation ratio. All right. So finally,
we have questions, observations before we move on.
I just want to thank Stephen. This is really wonky. So,
oh my God.
It's amazing. This puts a whole different prism on how this all works. I think it's easier for some of us to wrap our brains around.
Sorry for the small font. But
I really can.
Well, I have a question, though. If you get to the 50%, say, at the end, I just sheet shows how close the courts are coming to being more equal.
Yes.
Table 5.
Table 5.
Good. All right. Did I ask that right? For the right time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sent it to your email. So.
That's in the mail. Yes.
So this actually, I can't take credit. I would have done this to Judge Earl. Actually, asked for this. So this was exactly what Judge Good was asking about. I guess we'll just go to the bottom line. 17-18. It seems that the money in 16-17 and 17-18 that may not be a realistic assumption. But if that were to happen, you'll see that this is your Wasson need. So let's look. Not realistic. Let's look at Calusa. Actually, okay, Calusa. What column is that? Mm-hmm. Column I. And down, we'll go up four quarts or five quarts to Calusa, and you'll see that their percent of Wasson need is 99.3, but their, and this is a reallocation ratio. So you see, I sorted it based on column I from
no, J.
Lowest. Yeah. Based on column, sort of, this column, yeah. I is the lowest, and it goes to the highest percentage of WAFM need. And I put next to it to the right the reallocation ratio, because you'll see that there's a correlation between these numbers. That the higher you are, then
because actually I'm
it's an inverse relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
This is what I really want to get at. So let's go to current. Actually, this is probably the best example. So in 1414, their actual allocation, the Waffen related allocation, not their actual total allocation, was 35 million. The Waffen need was 68 million. So they were at 51% of their need in 1415. By 1516, they're going to actually be at 58% because they're going to get new funding about 5 million. They're projecting that they're going to get, they're going to be at a higher percentage of their need. 1617, they're going to go to 60%, and they're going to go to 63% in 1718. So by 1718, under these specific assumptions, they're going to be about 10% higher in terms of the funding, in terms of with respect to the need, because their reallocation ratio is the highest. That's the driving force behind that. And so it will be the exact opposite for the course with a lower allocation ratio. What's actually happening in these courses is that you'll see that they're actually, I should use a funding for it. Maybe the best example, I think actually best example is FISCU, is that right now they were actually almost at their need. If you look at the Waffen allocation versus the Waffen funding need, they're about exactly, but they're actually now losing funding because of the reallocation ratio. There wasn't enough new funding to offset that. So they actually are going below what the Waffen funding need is. And they will continue to go down until we reallocate all the money and we get enough new funding so that they will start going back up.
That's if the next steps are the remaining portion to be reallocated.
I'm not sure I understand. You're saying that you're talking about this decisions made after this 5-year period, right? Yeah, because we've never had those discussions.
Right. About if we went to 100%.
Yeah, we've never talked about that.
For all of the and all of the.
But assuming that we stop at 50%, and it'll just all be purely based on the new funding, the reality.
Yeah.
The
only thing that change.
Right. So essentially, what this is showing is that we are, you know, the intent of the Waffen model is to bring us all to a like
right.
level of funding. What that would mean statewide is 70.01%. We would all be 30% underfunded.
Yeah.
Be in each other's misery together. And so this is the thing, we're making that race, right? So current is improving, getting closer to 70%, but anyone above is being forced down to that 70% funding level at, it may be higher. Let's say hopefully we get new money next year and the year after, and that isn't 70%, maybe it's 75, 80%, but that is the reality, other than the funding floor.
Showing the Waffen portion at the 50% allocation, right? Not 100%.
That's right.
But
because we've never talked about that.
Right, right.
But the table 4 down at the bottom says that given the matching and stuff, we would already be at 66%, not 50.
Yeah, I neglected to mention that. So, yeah, if you go back to table 4, so 15-16, even though we have reallocated based on the phase funding, we actually have a historical base.
And this was the intent of the matching to allocate beyond percentages in the plan.
And 16-17, because we're assuming no new funding, it would just be the 10% increase. So it goes from 46 to 56. My assumption is that you get no new funding, so it just increased by 10%, 15%.
You know, the other thing with 5, even though, as Jake says, we're all driving towards funded at 17-18, there's still a range of from being 62% of Waffen need to 99%. So there's still quite a range
of
ports.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. And that is designed to incentivize us and legislature and governor for more funding.
Yeah. Right.
It doesn't get better without more funding.
No.
Right.
And one thing I've done, it can make a difference for some courts. I did include benefits in here because that is part of the Waffen allocation. So.
What is Waffen? I was going to ask him what the chances would be of getting new money, because really that was the point of stopping at 50% was to tell the governor, oh, there is. So, Zlatko, what is the chances of getting new money, do we think, in 16, 17, 18?
I think that's an important discussion that Martin is having and talking about with the plan, because they don't have any statements about the out years.
Right.
That's a big deal.
Last year they promised for this year, but they didn't promise for next year
as they talk about it.
Because our point was, we wanted to meet you halfway. That was kind of the point of WAFM, is we'll meet you halfway, but we need new money to make it work. So now I'm just curious how that conversation's going.
I know it's happening.
But it's not convincing. I mean, we're getting 5% last year.
Well, they haven't built the 16-17 budget yet. So I don't know. The foundation for that conversation is they build it 8 months from now.
Right, but I do think, that's a good point, is that when we talked about this initially, we're saying the only way to do this without new funding is to take away from, for one part to give, for another part to get, and that's a huge problem for us to solve on our own. And
right.
We said, well, we will be willing to commit to solve half the problem.
We'll meet you halfway.
But we can't solve the rest. And what this is saying is, well, the help they've given us has helped us solve 16% of the problem, where we've helped solve 50% of the problem.
You know, that's a really good talking point for Martin. I think that's an excellent talking point. I think that last chart is really good. Hey, we've done our part to meet halfway. We need now with new money to make it work.
And when you look at the trends on that last chart, you see it flatten out big time when you assume no new funding.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It only makes progress with new funding.
Right.
Right. And so I think you've heard Martin talk about it, the PJDCO means about stable funding. That doesn't mean just flat funding, but stable with a line pointing upwards. So in his mind, absolutely, it's got a trajectory. It's not stable and flat. It's stable and increasing.
But stable should be the number we need.
Plus 22.7.
2.424 or 434. That's stable, not where we are now.
Bye. Well, I think the other challenge we have when we talk with them is that the reality is right now when we get $90 million of new money, which isn't really $90 million, which we'll talk about in a second, right? Is then they want to know, what are you going to get for it? And we still can't answer that question universally because we have, of course, we're not at that equal, whether it's average or not, we aren't at that equal part, that spot. And I think part of the challenge is until we get there, you're going to continue to see these red cores grow, and you're not going to get the same thing that you're going to get.
That message is
on the other end.
In the legislature, given that members hear their local courts' impacts, whereas the governor's office is hearing the system discussion.
Okay, that's fair.
So there is a difference in how they hear the impacts. So they will see the reds, but then see the movement in the governor's office, whereas individual members will see the red for them, and not as much interested in seeing the impacts beneficially to other areas of the state.
See, and that whole issue is compounded by the fact that they really want to talk about what did you do with the new money we gave you, which is not netted against all the losses and reallocations and changes. And so we ran into this problem a couple of years ago. Well, tell us what you did with the $3 million you got. Well, no, we lost $1 million. Well, we don't care about all your other adjustments and unfunded benefits and stuff. And so that's going to continue to plague us as well.
So in the hearing a couple of weeks ago at the Senate, we talked about that, and I raised the issue that budget, though, was portrayed as having this increase. There were two major unfunded pieces, and said that to the committee so that they hear that it's not just all pluses. There were big negatives that impacted the relative benefit of those funds.
But likewise, they did say they want to see what they're getting for their money, and so we tried to say, look, we're all in different places, and we need that flexibility, because if you decide your pet project, you have some pet, let's say it's self-help, and you've got a court who has protected its self-help at the expense of other things, they end up with nothing, and it's not that they don't still need the money, and that's why, we have to stay flexible with how we allocate this.
Well, it's kind of impossible, really, to isolate those dollars, those new dollars, from the fullness of the rest of your, another way you're saying what you're saying, Mary Beth. I mean, we all made choices when the money started to go away, and so when the money comes back in small increments, it's hard for me to say I got $334,000. What did I do with those dollars? Those dollars went into a kind of a greater context of what did I do with my budget leading up to that moment.
Right, and they don't want to hear, you know, it to offset the increased cost of postage and the increased cost of just doing business. They want to hear something that's...
I hear something new and they're happy.
And is a good sound bite.
But I think maybe in terms of advocacy, we ought to be asking Kate Kern and Stanislaus and Riverside and San Bernardino to take the lead on saying, what'd you do with this extra money? Because they're the ones who actually are getting extra money and maybe could be the lead in saying, this is what we did. Whereas those, you know, the rest of us got stories that are more typical, you know, it's not so interesting.
But I would say, except for San Bernardino, I would say what Mike said is, wait, the $9 million or the $22 million eventually after a few years that we're going to get doesn't even offset the $25 million I had to cut in the last few years. I'm not even back to zero on the historical base, right? So
right. So let's understand. A couple of years ago, we focused. Of course, some courts had to focus on what they didn't have to do. I didn't have to lay off 30 people. Mm-hmm. I only laid off the 20. Mm-hmm. You know that.
I think we've got a huge problem if we cannot articulate, especially for the big gainers,
yeah,
improvements in access.
Yeah.
Right. Some of us are going to be treading water.
Right.
But mm-hmm, some folks are going to. I mean, if you get a 42% increase in your base budget over 2 years and you can't articulate an improvement in access, I think we all have a problem. Yeah. That'll bite us.
I can certainly articulate the access improvement offset by the access reductions.
Well, that, and
that I took all those years.
Yeah, sure. I think you are measuring against your low,
yeah,
and what you've been able to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I'll give my example. So I'm gaining, right, as a court. Mm-hmm. So we know what we're adding. Is that adding back? It is. Like we're reopening a courtroom. But that is what we're using the money for, is to be able to reopen that courtroom. Was it closed because it was a reduction? Yeah. But hey, I've reopened the courtroom.
All of us should be able to do that.
We went back to full days on Fridays instead of being, you know, closing at noon. And those are things that happened because of the new money that came in and the reallocation combined. It is difficult to isolate, which is that, is that the new money that did it or the reallocation. But, I mean, I think we do, to my
point, well,
we have to be able to say, well, what did that accomplish for those of us that went up and didn't go down? Because if we don't, that is a big problem.
So on that line, I went and read a bunch of snapshots yesterday. And we're in trouble on what we say in the snapshots. Because some courts who got money do say, I reopened courtrooms, I did this, I improved hours. And some that got money, it's silent. It looks like nothing happened. And that's not good. And I understand doing the snapshots that, I mean, for us, we're saying it's getting worse. And we can legitimately say, here's what's going to get worse. But for a lot of folks, I think they said, it's bad. And that's all they said. And it's not clear. If they got money, shouldn't it have gotten better somehow? So we got to be careful about what we say in our snapshot.
Or that
court. I wouldn't have thought of that until yesterday.
Or that court may not have really felt those snapshots were the best document to present and put.
Yeah, but the problem is that's what's out there right now.
And there's what we did.
I understand.
And there's another new story today on using those snapshots. So
that's too bad. And a lot of courts don't.
But we have to present something that's consistent, and I think
but
we're
not
kind of management.
When I talked about the snapshot, we had a specific discussion about we weren't going to present them in a manner where people can put them side by side. And what did we do? We posted them all together.
That was exactly
what
we have.
An article we're talking about through. It's unlikely anybody will do that, but
yeah. So maybe that's
there's
this
balance between consistency in reporting and and then how we achieve that.
Yep.
In a manner that the layperson can understand the nuances there.
Yeah, it's really going on behind. Discussion about not posting them together and posting them together.
That's what concerns me about this challenge. When we were all heading in the same direction, it was easy to be consistent. We're in different directions now.
Mm-hmm.
We have different things happening as the funds are coming back in a different way. And we're going to have to figure out how to cogently present that message, or the whole branch is going to take a hit on that. Some of us are going to have to ride on the coattails of others at this point until we can get to, you know, a better level of funding.
I think the story is chart 5. I mean, really, it shows that even now we don't have enough money for the branch. And if you really want us to all grow, we need whatever that gap is. in chart five, I thought was a great chart.
But in the meantime, we got to be able to say, what you have added, here's what you've got.
Sure.
And yeah. I mean, it's a delicate balance.
You see where it is in the state.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
you want to see that everywhere in the state,
What's interesting about that, I hadn't thought about this at all until we're talking about it, but it's almost like we need to be quadrating our messaging about what's happening. Like, these courts are the courts that are bringing up to the average, and here's what they're able to do, and here's the courts that really are just stable because they're
right
in the middle,
yeah,
and then here's the courts that really, there's new funding coming in, but because they're being brought down, so we can almost communicate that. Right, but then be able to communicate what's happening in those courts with that, so they come with the story to say, there is a plan.
Because their hole was deeper, these people are not moving a lot, and these people, unfortunately, are reduced to some services because they're the ones who are...
Yeah. Actually, you could in the snapshot itself, in that little box, you could say, you know, what category the court is in, and then you could say, therefore, you know, this court is having to cut services, and this court is able to increase services. If you set up those three categories, it's easy to put in a snapshot and then just look at this one.
I thought it was more for your own legislators and it's so easy to get to them. And that's when we pulled away from being consistent and having everybody report exactly the same. But when we did that, we acknowledged we can't be published in a manner where somebody might try to do that because it's not apples to apples anymore. And unfortunately...
Well, that's why if we say this one's an apple and this one's a tangerine,
yeah,
and this one's a
tangerine. Yeah. Right. Well, there we go. We can do fruit.
The talk about reducing services, I think you talk about readjusting service levels. You know, I'm talking about my court with a 17% population drop in the last 8 years and filing drops, and we're not getting rid of self-help, or we're not doing this. We've had to readjust our hours or readjust the way we're delivering those services.
Private industry, they call it right-sizing.
Mm-hmm.
Still a euphemism.
Yeah.
So the question I have is, now that we've seen the spreadsheets and the data, one thing that strikes me that in January of next year, after the January's budget proposal comes out, this group probably needs to get back together. If there's no new money in it for us, we have to get back together and talk about what happens after 17. Right?
Is that the right time to have the discussion, you think?
Well,
it'd be a year and a half.
And we know what there is or isn't in terms of new money.
Right. I'm afraid if we wait any much longer, then we have a very short window of time to try to figure out how we're going to address it.
I totally agree. It's the earliest possible moment, I mean, January the 11th or whatever, the day after. Because if we're not getting new money, it's going to be a travesty in the making for folks.
Mm-hmm.
Folks.
But the other question I have is, now that you've seen this data, is everyone, you know, do we think that Waffle Machine is or designed to work? Are there adjustments that need to be made? Some parts, like this view, are on they're the ones getting the biggest hit, so to speak, but other courts are too. Meanwhile, if you look at, I think, chart five, you see that some courts, even at the end, Kern is at 67% of the need, and then you go down to the bottom, and there the courts are at, if you don't count the funding floor court, because I think that's not considerably higher. So it's, what do folks think, Alan?
Well, I think in terms of the underlying formula, the RAS, the way we've structured that, I have no issues with that. You know, I don't, you know, the smaller courts, and there's some other issues, I think are frankly marginal compared to some of the other issues. My concern is WAFM as applied, except then there's the benefit problem, and then there's the revenue shortfall problem. And, you know, that washes for us. I mean, it's killing us on the benefit thing. And I'm not getting any, I'm still net down because my benefit unfunded, it wipes out what I get on anything else.
Okay, I'm not sure that I fully appreciate the benefit issue. Can you explain that?
Well, my benefit, for me, it's the only money that I will have to work with, period. I am down in every other category. The benefits money will be the only way I can do anything. It's that critical.
It's getting benefit money.
The decision on the benefits money that that's going to the council next week or whatever, huge.
Yeah.
That's the only money I can
devote.
That's
just saying
add to my bottom line.
Getting is not enough because you're getting a share of the costs. So your costs current year are higher than the revenue that you were getting.
Well, here's, put it real graphic terms. My retirement contribution last year was 24%. My retirement contribution rate for next year is 39%.
But that was in their budget. You didn't get all of it.
But not everybody else had a 24 to 39% increase. If it went from 24 to 25, I have a disparate impact, and I think Mike has the same issue.
And that was built into the cost change, though.
Are those increases related to what the county's doing here?
Oh, I
don't have any control over
it. We're all tied to the county.
I have
any control over those cost increases.
No, my board has decided to make our fiscal system in Orange County, our retirement system, more fiscally sound by shortening periods and increasing rates. They actually were concerned when I said, you're killing me. They said, well, can you afford to do this? And I said, well, yes and no. I mean, I can't not pay the money, but I have to cut somewhere else to do that. And it's millions of dollars. I'm carrying like $7 million a year of unfunded costs forward, cumulative from prior years.
And I'm
still not done. And you're
at 10 or 12, yeah.
Yeah. So it's
how does that work in the formula, though, Jay?
Well, there's two different parts, right? Yeah. So I just want to make sure I understand what Alan and Mike are saying. So we have the cost increases, not in the current year. But we all know we have to eat our cost increases in the current year, which is, if you go from 26 or 25 to 39, huge increase in the current year to have to survive. But I don't think that's your concern right here. Yours is, we had a cost increase. I'm going to make up the numbers. Cost increase of $1 million 2 years ago. The governor only gave us, for various reasons, 60% of that. So you didn't get your million. You got 660,000. So that 300,000 loss isn't accounted for anywhere, right? I mean, that's the concern.
And I have to pay for it that year, and I have to pay for it the next year, and
ongoing.
It's a permanent cut.
Right. So, which is what, and I guess my
but we are going to get part of that back. So that's when we talk about the $13 billion in 15, 16.
I know, but let's just say we all have the same problem. So how is it different from?
Well, so that's my question is how is, so I had the same thing, and it was 100,000, not a million.
This year's benefits decision was for 1 year only.
Okay.
How do you plan beyond 1 year? The fact that we've now made that more permanent now means that we can begin to count on that as permanent ongoing revenue. So, number one, we've got to get off of this. I mean, it's very frustrating to do something on a one-year basis because especially when you're in a down cycle under WAFM, you can't then plan beyond I've got to cut my budget anticipating I may not get the money next year. I mean, how do you – And I think that was the biggest level of uncertainty is the fact that we did the Solomonaic thing that none of us could therefore plan. Just the fact that we now have made a permanent decision, what I'll call a permanent decision, and we're going to need to address the funding for this next year. I know you've loaded it into the assumptions, but is that the way it's going to go down? We've got to get more certain so that we have the knowledge about how much we can expect or not expect because benefits is the only thing we have. Maybe
the other difference is, so we funded, with 70-some percent of everybody's increase. But if your increase was $1 million and mine was $5 million, and we both got 75%, my cut was way bigger than the next one. And that I've had that every year since we started this thing. So as I say, my cumulative is like $7.7 million, yours is 12-something. Not everybody's taken that same level of ongoing added benefit increases against their base.
Right, because you're
just losing every year on...
Okay, right, because there's a difference between, and this came up in the dependency group, I think, there's a difference between what is your share. So 75% of what you needed is one number. So 75% of a million is 700,000. There's a different one is what is your share of the total amount.
Right.
Different number.
Yeah.
Right, and so depending on how you apply that...
That varies widely.
Okay, I lost 10,000. And that's 90% of what I needed, but your 90% is $1.5 million.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if Earl and I were kind of trying to figure out is how that relates to WAFM because we handle it separately. We're trying to give it to the courts where the cost increase came in. I understand what you're saying, but the lack of certainty drives me crazy, too.
But it violates the basic WAFM thing says you get your benefits. The formula in WAFM says you get 100% of your actual benefit.
It says you're
calculating the need.
Right, you calculate the need.
And then when you allocate the money out, I'm not getting that.
But none of us are getting 100% of our income.
But it's a difference across courts. So it's not the same. I mean, if everybody got the same, the 75% isn't the same for everybody because of the difference in the total amount.
But if your cost is higher, your 70% is higher.
See, what, but I'm I guess not maybe, well, let me see if I can try.
It's still 30%.
1 year, Alan.
No, it's not.
Alan's,
it's going to be 15% of my base, and for you it's 2% of your
base. I'll just use Alan's court. So 1 year, Alan's 15% of the state benefits total increased. The next year he could be 5%. The next year he could be 20%. But they're slicing this across the line as though it's the same proportion year over year. So Alan could have a benefits number that is twice what Sherry's is with a workforce and a budget that is obviously much, much different. So at 75%, he's proportionally getting a huge reduction, and Sherry wouldn't. And maybe that would kind of be that simplistic analysis.
Yes, it's a difference. But I guess, I don't know, I'm kind of diverting on this. But this is an issue. I mean, right now the issue is we're really only talking about $20 million, right? I mean, it's the $20 million that was reduced last year out of the benefit increase, right? Because otherwise, what's in the budget this year is, or what's proposed, is to fill what our cost increases were last year, right? So we're really only talking about that $20 million, or whatever it was, 22.
And was that a permanent ongoing decision?
What?
By the governor? Or by us?
By the council?
Yeah.
By us, it was one time.
Yeah.
So that issue is addressed. But that $22 million, based on what the best information now, is 13 of that coming back. Mm-hmm. So now we're only talking a $9 million. Right.
Yeah, but you're still missing the $9 million. My chunk of the nine is bigger than Cherry's and Steve.
But we haven't decided how to do it yet.
That's a budget advisory committee.
But I just want to make sure I understand. I didn't understand until today, but I mean I understand your point is that your share of that total is greater. So we're allocating it to the different number.
Yeah.
But I just want to make sure we're talking. I'm not minimizing what it means for Orange, but it's $9 million out of $1.4 billion. So,
$9 million total.
Total.
I guess.
And it shouldn't be a problem going forward.
One of the nine is mine, and one of the nine
point is.
Right, no, I understand.
Yeah. When benefits is all you got, it's all you got.
Yeah. All right.
That's the only money I'm going to have to work with is benefits money.
And the irony is, my employees pay part of the employer share retirement. It's the opposite of what's going on in that the governor said about. And then my retirement board is trying to make the system more fiscally sound. So exactly the things Jerry Brown should want, I'm getting killed on under this formula.
Well, you shouldn't, because that money, that's next year, and they've committed to giving us that money. So
I'm not getting the whole amount. I mean, I'm getting it cumulatively. It just keeps getting worse. I keep going down.
Well, going forward, he's going to fund it.
So I have a 20 or 30 million I've had to eat over the last several years, but someday I'll be okay. I don't believe that, frankly. I mean, I don't know how you solve this, but frankly, in my opinion, we should vote that it's not new money until all the benefits are covered and all the revenue shortfalls covered. When we're even with the last year, then anything beyond that is new money that gets allocated and shared. Now, the governor might not like that because he wants to play with us on the benefit thing. But that would be more straightforward in terms of keeping people, not adding a cut to what WAFM does.
I guess, someone else is jumping. My concern with that would be right now he is refilling that $22 million. Whereas
and he'll keep
progress is made, he's mm-hmm. showing that he's going to fill it. If we then take $9 million of money and we fill that hole, then the answer is going to be, well, you took care of it. Why? Give the $9 million, and then
but in the meantime, Mike and I get killed.
Well,
the suggestion is that the 90 be only counted as new what you deduct the shortfall.
Shortfall of revenue shortfall and benefit shortfall.
The revenue is another one of those.
I think we can get it by the way, and they can end it by now. I want it known that we're taking a cut because of that. And we've been overly responsible.
So what it does is that impacts the allocation amounts.
Yeah.
Why don't we take a break for, about 30 minutes, and then we can, when we come back, maybe we should talk about what, I mean, right now, new money that we've defined under WAFM is new money for general operations that is allocated under WAFM. So the question that I think Mike is going to raise is really, should we take care of things like the revenue shortfall first before it,
I don't think we ever actually defined what new money was. But we also didn't have the problem of revenue shortfalls and benefit shortfalls when we started.
See, ironically, that's the problem Zocco brings up, which is they believe they've given us, you know, $90 million, but when you subtract the unfunded mandates, we'll call them, of, you know, benefits or revenue, the real new net money is far less than the $90 million. And so how do then we respond to that? And I understand that if we fill the hole, we've kind of let them off the hook. But I do think we have to have a discussion about what is new money in that sense.
So since we take a break and then come back and have a discussion. So we will mute our line and we'll unmute it at 12:05. All right, we are back from our break, and we'll pick up where we left off. Are we recording? Which was, I think, where we left off. Previously, we had, in our report that went to the council in 2013, the recommendation that was adopted was to allocate any new money appropriated for general trial court operations entirely pursuant to WAPA. And I think there was some interest in having a discussion about that today. Right?
Right.
So where do we want to start? Alan?
So the that doesn't define what new money is. And basically, we've just accepted the governor's version of what new money is. I'm not saying anything wrong with that. That's just what we've done in the past. But when that original, those things came up, I don't think anybody contemplated shortfalls of revenue or shortfalls of benefit funding explicitly. So I think the changed circumstances, why you would revisit that, is that now we do have issues of shortfall of revenue and shortfall of benefit funding. Suggest we revisit what's new money for purposes of WAPM allocation. You know.
So your suggestion is that
when I have a discussion first,
I'm not sure I understand what you mean, Alan, because we had a little discussion earlier about carving out the revenue shortfall and how we distributed the shortfall. Right, and so we didn't count that as negative new money.
Right.
We dealt with that separately. So I guess my question is, what are you suggesting we should be doing different from the path we've laid out to this?
Well, that was a one-off, we thought it was one-time kind of thing, so I don't know that sets a precedent other than one-offs. I think that the premise I would say would be we start with the whatever money we got last year, that amount would be the base, and anything above that would be new money. So that if that base gets reduced, for example, by revenue shortfall, then you've got to backfill the revenue shortfall before we're back to where we began. And on the benefit side, it's not the same, because if your benefit costs go up, I would say your base has gone up by the amount of those benefits, because you can't do anything about those benefits. We have no control over the vast majority of the benefit increases we have. If the retirement board, PERS, whatever, says it's going from 12% to 19%, we have to pay it. We don't have any choice. And there's no ability to renegotiate to a different retirement plan. Trust me, I looked at that. and so that if you're going to say we're going to keep people at the same position, the branch at the same position, then it's not new money until you've covered that we're the same. We're starting from where we started last year, which would be filling in any revenue shortfall, covering any uncontrollable benefit increases. And I would leave the definition open, because I don't know what I don't know, because we didn't know about those two things when we started, to say maybe there's other things that says it's not new money until we the only new money starting from where we were last year, adjusted by a few. Benefit increases.
Well, let me ask, if we talk about unfunded benefit costs, and if we carve out for that, do we also open the door to things like those courts that don't have non-sheriff security costs? And they're saying, we don't get funding for these non-sheriff security costs, so that ought to be taken out of that new money before you allocate. Do we open the door to those types of things being backed out as well?
That's why I was saying, I don't know what I don't know. That one, I would say, that's not it. I would WAPM them, so I would say because it's WAPM allocation we're talking about, let's talk only, it's limited to things that are included in WAPM formula, because the security wouldn't have been in there.
Benefits aren't in WAPM, right?
Hmm?
The benefits aren't in WAPM.
Benefits are totally in WAPM, because you get 100% of your cost, actual cost. Yeah. And if you don't get 100%, it's not a WAPM formula, the way I see it.
Hey, Judge Earl. Another one potentially that wouldn't be WAPM, but to your point, dependency council funding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could make that same argument, but again, it's not part of the WAPM formula, so I wouldn't even want to go down that road.
But if we got 100 and whatever it is, 108 million dependency funding last year, and we got 108 this year,
That's not a change. I don't think. I mean, so I think.
Well, I'm just trying to think of other potential issues.
Yeah. I understand that, you know, politically that may not be sellable, but if we want to say we want stable, rational, predictable funding, to me that's where this supports that.
The benefits issue and the revenue shortfall issue feels different to me, but I don't I can't figure out. I don't know
why it does, because the revenue shortfall really impacts all of its benefits. It's driven by counties, you know, we're tied to the counties, but also we're all in a different place in terms of who pays, and we're all in a different place in terms of what benefits are received. And so when you take a snapshot and only look at one piece of the benefits, and there's, you know, PEPR that's coming up, so there's a lot of pieces with benefits that makes it a lot more complicated, and I wouldn't lump it in with revenue shortfall. I'm not saying we don't consider some of these issues. I'm just saying I think it is very different because there are many courts that their benefits is incredibly low, and that's because they haven't had money to include that as part of their package. You know, their county hasn't, they haven't. So anyway, it's just one of those strange things. So I would look at them separately. I'm not saying you wouldn't do something similar, but I'm not sure I would lump them as if they're the same.
Because it seems to me the benefits issue in some courts would be, I understand that revenue shortfall, but for benefits, some courts would be paying for other courts' benefit and cost increases. Is that?
LA has every year, because our employees have paid for their benefits forever.
No, but you're about if we take money out of the so-called new money and backfill the benefits, that somehow that has other courts paying benefits. But
well, I mean, that's
you could run it both ways. I mean, my argument is I'm paying somebody else's benefits because I'm not getting the money.
Well, I mean, it's a legitimate point, I think, that Sherry's made, because she's right. There are courts that have historically been very poorly funded. They haven't had much in their benefit package for employees.
Right.
There are courts that have been well-funded or relatively well-funded that have had a very enhanced benefit package. Mm-hmm. And so there isn't an apples-to-apples comparison. Yes, we all have health coverage, but maybe in court A, you know, the employee is picking up a higher percentage of the premium than in court B. I mean, it's a complicated, the model is complicated, and there are some courts that are paying for benefits that other courts are not paying for at all, that haven't been negotiated for at all.
That's
you know?
The point. That's
yeah.
It's a hard one to tackle because you can't.
We'd have to unpack it.
Right. Yeah, you have to look at the whole package of benefits, or do you? Because they're all very, you know, different. So I'm just not.
So it's
we did overtly consider all that in adopting the Waffen formula and chose to say, we're not going there, we're going to pay actuals. That's in Waffen now.
We did.
You know, I think one of the challenges that courts have, especially if they're going into negotiations, is sometimes they have to come back to their bargaining units and say, you know, we used to pay $500 a month towards your benefits, and we can't afford that anymore, and we're going to cost shift some of that. It doesn't mean the benefits themselves go down, but it means that the employer share will go down, or that we used to pay for, you know, cell phones for our managers, and now we're going to take that cell phone benefit completely away, and you're going to have to buy your own cell phone. I mean, there are many courts that don't pay for cell phones. There are some courts that do pay for cell phones. There are many courts that pay a mileage allowance. There are some courts that don't pay a mileage allowance. All that is rolled into that big benefit number. Mm-hmm. And I know that when we report on our benefits every year in Botco, you're the guy that would know, but I know that we capture our health, dental, vision, life. I think that's kind of the core market basket of benefits. But then there are all kinds of other things around that package that are captured that just kind of get rolled in together, right?
I don't think we get any. Do we have anything as it relates to travel reimbursement and others? I don't think that those are part of the reimbursement.
It's not travel reimbursement. It's like car allowance or, you know, I've even seen library allowances and longevity pay and things that are longevity.
Non-salary.
Yeah, right.
None of that would be in.
Yeah, so it's hard to really address.
Is it? That's in our cost changes to the U.S.
No, not in the cost changes.
That's what I'm trying to get at. The money's, yeah, it is. you were sitting like that, and I go, we're not paying for that, I don't think.
So we need to,
I want to clarify. It's in WAFM, all of those costs, insurance,
yes.
But what we submit to DOF and what is being funded are health and retirement.
Yes.
Health, dental, retirement.
Yeah, but not
really the
car allowance, not cell phone, any of that. Those are separate.
So you have separated those out when you do
that. Yeah, when we ask for the money. Mm-hmm. WAFM calculates your need based on all of those, that full benefit load for you. But when we ask for the money, it's only for those areas that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that establishes the break point about what we consider and don't consider.
Yeah, maybe.
Our AOC or Judicial Council Finance folks identify as the piece that we're going to submit to the state for reimbursement or for funding.
I don't know. I definitely see the two of them separate.
Me too.
So,
yeah.
I mean, and I think it feels like the debate is around the benefits piece, and maybe that's not true. Maybe we're focusing on the more complicated one, but I just have a hard time with it because it feels right now to me to be what should be an isolated issue that, okay, he has said he will fund the increases the governor has, and the legislature has backed it up each year in the last 3 years, right? Then the $22 million that got pulled out, of which $13 million has already been confirmed to get restored. So, you know, we're starting to narrow what this issue is, and as we talked about, the more we get into benefits, the more complicated it becomes about what's been historic, what's been negotiated. You know, we are independent. We all negotiate with our unions locally, and the more we start getting into some of that, the more that problem for each of us locally as we have that discussion. So,
I don't have any problem discussing the issue. I would be worried that we lose sight of the end goal of all this. As it currently stands, at the end of the implementation of WAFM, we still have about a 38% disparity between the lowest funded and the upper funded courts. And if we start doing these things that make that disparity even larger at the end of 5 years, that seems to me to be losing sight of the goal.
And I would argue in contrast, because I'm being shorted more than others on benefits, I'm actually going the other direction. It's unfair. We were supposed to go to getting more fair, and I know it's going to take a while to get there, but in the process of getting there, we're creating unfairnesses along the way
that we can avoid.
That
depends on the definition of fairness, because fairness means that we're all somewhat equally funded percentage-wise, then I don't think we are coming. I don't think that is unfair. But I'm certainly welcoming the discussion.
Jake, since you're the expert on WAFM, would you remind me, I should have brought my long, you know, my big long thing that reminded me of how all these calculations work. But remind me again how WAFM incorporates benefits.
So, Stephen might be better to answer this.
Okay, Stephen.
Well, there's two separate categories. We'll see if I get it right. There's two separate categories. So there's salary-driven benefits and there's non-salary-driven.
Right.
So on the non-salary-driven benefits, which is health, dental,
that's not just what we're talking about.
It's both. Let's go salary-driven benefits
first.
Salary-driven benefits are the actual retirement that the employer, whatever the employer is paying, some total of that as a percent on each dollar, plus Social Security and, you know, other.
That's factors. Salary-driven.
That's salary-driven.
And it's impacted by the BLS?
No.
It is not?
No.
Okay.
The
salary is.
I think it should be.
So it is a percentage.
Because the salary is.
Right, it's a percentage that is applied to
that salary.
Both salary bucket after BLS.
So it's
already in there in terms of salary.
Exactly.
Right.
So in other words, I guess what I would want to try to understand is that if your BLS factor is over or under one, that's going to make an adjustment to what's available to pay for your benefits if they're not aligned to.
Only on
salary-driven. Money what's available to pay them. In other words, depending on where you are. So yeah, keep going. You knew what.
Benefit rate, for example, is 20% retirement.
Sure.
It's 20% times your salary, but the salary is based on the BLS number.
Right.
Which is what you're paying.
But
yeah.
Well, that's what we allotted under the formula.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the rate is the actual
rate.
We are paying.
Okay. So that's the salary driven.
So then, you could have done that if you tried. But on the non-salary driven benefits, that's healthcare, dental, I don't know, it's SCI and SCIB on the other side. So that's what those actually, on an average, based on the 7A, what is the court listing as the average benefits contribution for the non-salary driven benefits off the 7A? So for next year, it would be based on
this year's 7A.
This year's 7A.
Yeah. So the Wofford model for next year would be from this year's 7A because those aren't in yet to run for 15.
But the point is retirement's a percentage, 20%, say.
Right.
But a health benefit is so many dollars.
Dollars, right.
That's why it's just that flat rate, not a percentage. Right.
Right. Right. And we did make the conscious decision to just whatever the court is paying, is that what the court is paying, because that's what, you know, is locally negotiated. And there's on the retirement side, we have no control.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the
healthcare, we
kind of.
And may not have control depending on.
Right. You might be in, I mean, there are some coastal counties where, you know, their health care costs are really high. There's nothing they can do about that. That's just what exists in their community. And so we didn't want to try and get in there and start arguing over, well, you're living in County X and health care costs are higher in that county, but you're not going to get the money for it. It's just, that's not our.
And your point, Ellen, is that if we're all funded at 70% and your costs jump, your 30% is harder to absorb because your percentage to cover is so much higher. That's what you're saying. It's your gap. That's your point.
Yeah. If one court goes up 10 percentage points and everybody else goes up an average of 5, then you're that's a
you
cut.
You still get 70% of 10, but your 30% is still higher.
Right.
Yeah.
Share of
actual dollars. Yeah.
Compared to other share.
Right. So if we take an extreme example. So Alan's increase is $10 million. Mary Beth's increase is $100,000. So we have we got $10,100,000, and we get funded at 70%. Well, Mary Beth's going to get 70 of her 100,000, and Alan's going to get 7 million of his 10 million.
But isn't it relative to the size of the budget, too, though?
It is. But Alan's,
if Mary Beth's budget is the same as his, then he got far more to cover, because that can happen where the same size budget can have differing rate changes. And the gap of unfunded is higher for that rate that went up more.
Yeah. So we looked real fast at what the unfunded benefits were in the ranges, the 0.1% of your total allocation to 0.6% of your total allocation. So it's a 6-to-1 spread on the hit people's actual increases were. I mean, it sounds like a small amount, but in a big budget, 0.6% is millions of dollars. So.
Everybody had the same rate budget. Maybe they have 7%, 7%.
I guess I'm a little concerned about isolating one thing, such as benefits, to the exclusion of everything else that's going on with court financing. I get the shortfall, because the shortfall, as Sherry said, applies to all the courts, and what it really does is reduce the amount of the money that the courts are getting over the previous year. It's just political rhetoric that says we get X plus Y when we're really getting X, because Y is the shortfall. But when you start pulling a thread, it just seems to me that there's probably all sorts of other things that have disparate impacts, too. You know, for example, we're losing the complex litigation funding this year. When we tried to change the subvention, because it was a rational economic decision once upon a time to subvent, it costs us money to adjust the subvention. We're not coming here and saying we should get that money back, just because we're worshiping a principle that we have to reduce the subvention. So I appreciate what you're saying, but I think it's probably like one piece of many pieces of a larger puzzle, and to focus only on that one, it seems to me, probably is not fair, especially when we're still trying to converge to get to a greater level of equality, and we're nowhere near there at this point. So it may mean that some courts get there a little faster, and I know it's more painful, but I don't know that I find myself offended by the fundamental unfairness of it.
The difference to me is that the Waltham formula specifically includes benefits. Doesn't have anything to do with complex or anything like that. So you're, to me, you pulled the thread on Waltham formula, the use of Waltham, by saying, oh, no, we're not going to be, not going to follow the rule after all about benefits, because we're going to ignore a benefit shortfall. That's the difference to me. I mean, the complex theoretically will show up in the filing thing. So in a sense, that's been stirred into the formula. But the benefit thing is explicitly in the formula of Waltham as full actual. It was that way after a lot of discussion right from the get-go. So my distinction there is that we're unraveling Waltham if we don't treat benefit shortfalls, or if we treat them differently. The revenue shortfall, you know, it's how you allocate it. Last time we allocated it based on the 2% formula, which I wasn't in that discussion. I don't know. If you say, no, we're going to backfill revenue shortfall, you're essentially saying we're going to apportion that money by Waltham, the way we're doing everything else. If you don't include that and you allow that money to be called new money, you're not moving more old money as match when, in fact, so it's a double hit in some respects. And you can argue that either way, too, but it seems to me that it's not new money if it's not more than we got before last year.
So does anyone else have a thought on the benefit piece that Alan has raised? I don't know if there's much support for it, but...
Can I make a motion saying that we're going to include benefit shortfalls, we're going to backfill them with before new money is allocated? Yeah. I make that motion.
Okay. Or that we would take that to the budget committee?
I want it out on the table.
I'll second the motion.
The recommendation is that any shortfall in benefits funding increases? I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, whatever the shortfall in benefit from what the governor added for that versus actual would be taken out of new money before the new money is allocated according to the new money process in Waltham.
Then it would be allocated in the same manner any other benefit funding is being allocated?
Yeah, if we get $30 million for benefits and the actual is $35 million, then $5 million would go into that pot to make sure everybody got all the way up to $35 million, and then whatever's new, what's left is new.
You know, we have this motion and a second, any discussion?
Yes.
The only concern I have is not so much the one that are imposed based on county changes, but if we do this automatically, it does also then kind of have a effect where you could go and negotiate increases now in your contract because you're always going to have them, you know, covered. And that's not the message we wanted to send to the governor. So, you know, I do worry about that piece. Because if the motion is that if there's ever a gap, it always comes first, well, why would not all of us, 58 of us, go out and start negotiating these big, you know, not putting them in the salaries, but putting them in the benefits side, and then they're always covered. I worry about that. So, you know, I don't know if you want to consider that as part of your motion, but I would not support the motion for that reason.
Well, that gets back to my point about how you have to sort of unpack the benefits. If you're going to do this, you do have to do some due diligence to make sure that, you know, that the frilly benefits aren't factored into the map.
County-driven.
Yes, it's really just the county-driven negotiated costs of, you know, with the health care providers and the dental provider and the pension provider and the retirement costs.
Well,
so let me amend it to say, just the retirement, the employer share retirement costs that are going up.
Not other benefits. So just the retirement.
This is a post meeting.
Yeah.
Thank you. Second.
I do. Sherry's got a very good point.
It does.
I'm feeling feverish.
And she'll request a written transcript.
Yes.
So should we be concerned that the $9 million that's left, right, that hasn't been reimbursed by the legislature and governor, is not going to be decreased? Is there any motivation, and I get the part that, not everybody can get their unions to agree to this, but should we be concerned that if we do this and basically everything's fully funded, right, that we're never going to get back the rest of that $9 million because what's the motivation to move forward with figuring out what the benefits?
So I was untying the two of them. I saw Alan's as a, not that I'm opposed to figuring out how to fix that, but Alan's concern was county mandated changes to benefits, and then we have a separate problem, which is the employer paid portion that should go to the employees.
But the problem is the only reason we're talking about this
right.
is because of that.
No.
Issue.
No.
Well,
is the only reason we're talking about this.
Because Alan's problem is different than Mike's problem.
Yeah, but my motion was that the employer share
employment.
I understand.
But that didn't go there.
But the only reason we have this claim shortfall is because of the employer paired employee contribution. If that had been fully funded, we wouldn't be talking about this right now.
Right.
It wouldn't have been. You could argue this wouldn't have been highlighted as an issue, right? But, you know, next year, if everything goes the way that is currently proposed in the governor's budget, this issue isn't going to exist because there isn't going to be this gap. It won't exist. The only reason we're talking about it is because of the policy encouragement, you know, that the governor is giving through, you know, financial holding, right? So I mean, that is why we're talking about it. And I think Chris is right. If we end up saying, well, we'll go ahead and fund any retirement increase on the employer side, the employee share never increases. Well, it shouldn't. Well, it can't now.
Sure.
They
can increase if they don't pay enough now.
But that's exactly what Alan's problem is, the county has changed the employer and employee contribution rates in order to get to a solvent system. We have the same potential with our county saying, you know, we're going to up both your rate and the employee's rate so that, you know, it goes from 23% to 34%, especially if they're trying to catch up with an underfunded pension system. How do we respond to that? Well, if the governor doesn't cover that and Alan's not a PEPRA issue, I think that's the crux of the problem. Those of us that have to deal with PEPRA are going to have to deal with PEPRA. Not only because we want to get the money in for the good of the branch, but because we've got 2018 staring at us and we've got to deal with it anyway. All the governor's done is to push that question forward a couple of years.
So let me ask you this question. So in the current environment where the reduction was driven by the PEPRA contributions, if this had been in place, we would have backfilled that reduction. Is that what you're proposing, or would that have been treated separately because we recognize that's a separate total issue? It's a separate issue. It's not really a benefits issue.
Whatever the amount of the employer share went up out of all that would be covered.
Not the employee share has never been in our benefits funding. It's never been in there.
Yeah.
We report it, but
all
we
of the employer share. A bunch of courts where the totality of their shortfall is employer share.
Well, now that's
we're subsidizing other courts.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, because otherwise this looks like we are trying to work around what the governor has done, and we've been very careful to try to appear to be addressing the issue, even though we recognize it's not contrary to law, it's not contrary to
and we'll receive the money back.
You know, we recognize all that, but we wanted to appear to be responsive, and it just seems this could appear at this point in time that we're trying to circumvent that in another way. So
no, it's partly a spin thing. I mean, if we say, look, the point is we're recognizing systems where the employer share is going up, nothing to do with PEPRA, and we're going to cover that.
So
that's what the shortfall is, though.
That's what we normally do.
It's the not funding those costs at an equivalent amount of what they believe you're covering for your employees, you being those that do. So they see the full costs, even your 24 to 32 rate increase, but then said, but we see courts who have been paying the employee share, and we calculated it at $22 million, and we're lopping that off the top.
So, I'm
so they've separated the way, I mean, they said it's 64, but then we're taking 22 to get down to 42. That is recognized, and that's what we submitted.
So what we did was effectively say, you, the governor, said, I'm not paying employee share. And we figured out, okay, that, or they figured out that's X dollars, and they shorted us that amount. Internally, what we ended up doing was saying, well, we're going to pay whatever, 74%. We redistributed the employee share being paid by the branch to everybody.
Right.
Right. By individual.
That contradicts the governor's thing. See, I was saying
we
expressed their displeasure with that, but that was the discussion from last July.
They gave a 1 year.
And the discussion in July was it's late. And
the cost had already been incurred.
Of reasons why it was a transitional one time. So for the good things that it helped, those courts that were making the contribution, it also then makes hard for planning because what are your out year issues? But there was the full discussion was had about the implications on I'm not picking up my employee share and yet I'm going to share in this.
Right.
That was the collective recommendation and action.
We're trying to be consistent with the governor. And I'm saying, well, we're not going to be, let's not be.
That means to be consistent, their expectation would have been is that if you're court A and you're paying for employee share, your calculated share goes to you, and if you're not, you get your full 100%.
Right.
That was discussed as well, and that's not where it ended up landing last
July. So that
July.
Discussion happened, and where we ended up as a branch saying, there's no governor, we're not going to do what you said. But now when I'm saying, no, let's cover things, you're saying, well, the governor might not like that. And to me, that's inconsistent.
Well, except that we made progress, I guess.
Yeah.
And you know, I just want to make sure we don't take a step backwards. So what we did the first year, but we sent the warning out. We had significant response to that. We're coming down the home stretch. So now what I'm trying to do in my mind is think past that. And let's going forward, PEPRA's done, we're done with that. If at any point our benefits funding is not fully funded, and there's not some specific reason, it's just, sorry guys, we can't fund it, do we apportion it this way?
So I want to piggyback on what Judge Good said, which is I would be concerned about starting to carve things out of WAFM that we compromise the integrity of WAFM, especially on maybe an issue that we may be able to resolve on our own outside of WAFM.
Can I ask a clarification on the motion? I'm not quite sure what you're moving, Alan. Are you saying that if and to the extent there's a shortfall, that should not be considered new money for purposes of the WAFM spreadsheet? Or are you saying that that money should be put into a fund and divided among the courts to cover the shortfall? I don't know whether you're talking about PIC or dollars.
Well, both in a sense. What I'm saying is take the dollars out of the new and cover all the increased employer share benefits first.
If the legislature gives us an increase but overtly says we're not covering benefit increases, we as a branch should say, well, that's good for you, but we're covering the benefits rather than using that to benefit all the courts.
Right.
So what we'd be doing is thumbing our nose or putting our thumb in the eye of the legislature.
I think we're doing that already.
We did it one time on the one year for the reasons that were just explained, but I think that puts us in a very untenable position as a branch, given the fact that the legislature and the governor would have said, here's how you can spend this money, and we're going to be saying, no, we're going to, thank you very much for your opinion on that, but we're going to take that money and reallocate it in a way that's contrary.
That's exactly what we're doing right now. They said, we're not paying you for where your employee shares.
I think we had good reason for doing it the one time. I'm not so sure.
And we took heat about that.
Have we gotten any heat from
We did. We have.
Mm-hmm.
We have.
Still restoring the money, let me
see. The money for the people that negotiated the employee share.
Judge Kuhl.
There aren't many left that have it.
You know, we really had a very excellent memo on this a year ago, and it had three, as I recall, it had three options, and one of the options was a partial, 20%, or there was some percentage of the shortfall that would be borne by the courts that had the PEPRA problem.
not to say that's the where we should be going, but it was, I thought, a much more thoughtful discussion by having all that laid out in front of us as options. I'm not going to make a motion to table because I think I don't want to quash the discussion, but I do think that having something in writing with tables and options would be helpful ultimately before we get to, and maybe that's at the full committee stage. I don't know.
Well, the budget, the benefit issues, is that is being taken to the council next week.
Yeah, right.
It's on going to be auction on how to.
It's 50% next year and 100% the year after. Mike?
Led by a group, Mike.
And so this would be your motion, Alan, is for when? What is it applied to? Next fiscal year?
Yeah.
So I think there's no cap.
The next fiscal year is what's going to the council?
Next week. Yeah, I know we want
to. Actually, it's 2 years.
But I think what Alan's saying is so that recommendation would go to the council as it exists,
okay.
And so that benefits funding would be allocated based on that memo with multiple options. But that to the extent that that allocation to a court is less than their retirement increase was in that year, any new money would fill that before going to be considered new money. I think that's essentially mechanically how you would be saying this would go forward.
So. Mike?
I'm the pepper elephant in the room.
Okay.
We all know it. If you look at the $8.1 million and the May revise, I'm 4.5 of that. I've got the eyes of the world on me trying to figure out how we're going to deal with pepper. I've said for the last 2 years that there was no way to deal with that because I had existing contracts that we weren't prepared to reopen. I've got to address that issue. So let's put it square on the table. If we're going to get any of that money back, I'm going to have to deal with our PEPR problem. I know that. I get that. I understand that. The benefits money is huge because it's the only hope I have of dealing that without laying off more employees, hundred or so more employees in order to do that. So, you know, Alan's putting me in a tough spot because I get the retirements issue, but at the end of the day, San Diego is the elephant in the room when it comes to the pepper problem. So this is a public meeting. It's out there. We all know it. You can look at the charts. The action has benefited our court to the extent that if we hadn't gotten our pepper problem, I would have millions of dollars less to potentially solve the problem that I face today. So, you know, at some point you're going to lose me, Alan, because I'm the guy that's the big problem in the room. I have not had growth money to deal with PEPR like others have. So benefits is my only hope. And so that I fully support the benefits recommendation. If the council endorses that, we move forward. That gives me something to work with to try to solve that problem for the good of the branch.
Sherry and then Chris.
So just to clarify for me, we're talking about $9 million. Because now the governor came back, added some more money because courts had negotiated the pepper problem in those courts, right? So now we're talking about, look at his law code, there's only $9 million left that courts need to renegotiate. And my understanding of how the calculation works, and I'm going to ask you, Chris, is that when you shift it, it's about 60% of what it was. You get some savings when you shift. In other words, it's not a dollar for dollar. What did you find out it was?
Mine was a different number than I have on that.
What was yours?
Mine was higher. It was 80, 85.
You gained 80%. See, I think it'd be closer to 60. And the reason I say this is because I've raised this before. I wouldn't mind taking whatever the courts need to solve their PEPR problem from the Child Support Trust Fund on a condition that they solve it because the investment would be 100% back. So it wouldn't cost them $9 million to solve it. It might cost them $6 or $7 to solve it, but then the governor would give us $9 back. So anytime there's a rate of return that high, it's a good investment.
Which does it cost more than that?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's...
And I've got as far as I'm going to talk about this subject in a public meeting,
yeah.
Given
okay.
The fact that I have... upcoming negotiator.
Yeah. Do you have anything else? Yeah, I'm still confused on how we're going to the council next week with the recommendation from the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee based on the subcommittee's recommendation to that group.
And Chris, remind everybody what it is.
Well, that is basically, and this is the point, so that is basically 50% of the money, the $13 million that we get back, basically, 50% will be reallocated to everybody, so it goes up from 68 to about 86%. I think everybody in the room will get 86% of their benefit, met.
From that year.
From that year. And then the other 50%, right, which is like, you know, whatever, of the $9 million we're not getting, so $4.5 million, the court said have not fixed their PEPPER problem, will get 50% of that, not back. So, and the other 50% goes back to everybody. So basically they're contributing, and the next year they get nothing reimbursed, right? So you're motivated over the next 2 years to fix that PEPPER problem. We will help you towards 50% of the amount that isn't fixed this year and nothing next year. So fast forward, that's going to council next week. How does this motion, it seems to me this motion contradicts that. I mean, so picture what's going on here. We're going to the council, right? The council, presumably, we'll see, will say, sure, go forth and do good things. We accept that. Then we've got this other one going on, which basically undoes it. It basically doesn't motivate them with the 50% next year, et cetera.
Well, realistically, we wouldn't have a budget meeting before I present the other issue to the council next week.
Right. So, I'm voting no.
Unless you're saying it'll apply in fiscal year.
Given that I'm down to one vote, I withdraw the motion.
Yeah.
I appreciate the discussion.
All right.
So I think then we do need to talk about the other element, though, that which is item two, I think, right?
Yep.
We sort of bled into item two already. But
item two?
Right.
Three.
Two. So that's the shortfall.
Yeah.
But item two is the revenue shortfall, which is, obviously Alan brought that up before. So I don't know if we need to talk about that, but I think the theory is that if there is a $22.7 million, well, let's go back to last year. So that was allocated one time under the theory that maybe we would be successful in advocating to get that shortfall filled. So we just want to permanently allocate it. So the council, the recommendation from the Capital Budget Advisory Committee was not to allocate it. The council ultimately did allocate it using the 2% funding methodology as a one-time reduction. So when you look at the documents provided by Stephen and Lotto and others at the Chalker Budget Advisory Committee in late March, they assumed that $22.3 million was not going to be backfilled and it was gone forever. So that's 22.7. So the question becomes, well, how are we going to allocate that going forward? Is that an allocated reduction? If so, using what calculation? Is that, as Alan suggested, that's a hole, and so if we get $90 million, it's $90 million less $22.7 million, and then you're allocating $67 million as new money with a match. So I mean, that's why we wanted to put on the agenda now, is that maybe something that we can address. Well, at least from lots of statements earlier, it looks like that was not addressed this year. They said last year it wasn't going to be addressed. There does not appear to be a lot of hope for that money getting restored. So it was an item we could pick up now. Maybe we resolve it now, maybe we don't, but at least it's not left for discussion in May.
And, Blanco, when did you put in the BCP for that 22.7?
In September.
There's an official.
In fact, we actually put in the deficient request earlier than that and then gave them updates in October about the shortfall and said that, yes, it's
A formal BCP request?
Yeah, as by Budget Advice Committee and the Council.
The Council.
And they've denied it.
Mm-hmm. But they recognized the budget year 19.8 as increased revenue shortfall, but not in
Blanco,
anymore.
Question. I mean, I'm trying to understand and decipher all this. With the governor's proposal, other than the 22.7 from last year, would we be whole in terms of revenue this year?
As it stands now, yes, assuming that our updated May revision further decline is also funded as it was in the governor's budget. It's like $13 or $14 million more, but we've provided that to the DOF. And so assuming that the May revision reflects that next lower revision, we would be full by last year's 22.7.
So we could go from 22.7 to 35.7 if the governor doesn't cover it in the May revise.
He said he would, though. He made that statement.
Yeah, but and I would say is that we also expected that there would have been a current year coverage of our shortfall
But that didn't happen, and so I think I'm sort of halfway there. You know, we have salary savings in judicial compensation that's covering it, and TCTF savings otherwise that are allowing us to cover the allocations in the current year, but we are good in the budget year. And then there's only the implications of the IMF transfer that we look like we have on a one-time basis for 15-16 sufficient dollars to cover that. But that it will have an ongoing implication, say in 16-17, an ongoing because that on net does reduce revenues to the TCTF.
By
so the 22.7 is pretty much, we believe that that is never coming back. We can wave at that one.
Right.
Right? So I think there is an opportunity to discuss that one because, you know, these other parts are still moving and whether they fund the, you know, the continuing shortfall in revenue and so forth. So the $22.7 million is real dollars, and it's real dollars that are not coming back. And so Alan's other point about, and I think they were those, that revenue shortfall is different than the benefit conversation. I think we could have a conversation about whether or not there's an opportunity to, as Jake put it, take the $90.6 million, deduct $22.7 million, whatever that number becomes, $68 million or something like that. But that's the part that gets considered real new money, or considered the new money, for lack of a better word, and that we use that $22.7 million to do restoration not under the WAFM formula.
It hits 14-15, so this is the year.
Well, I was so eloquent that everybody stopped talking.
Well, no, I was just thinking that part of the thing I think that the original funding methodology subcommittee did not do was talk about, you'll have to remind me, how to allocate reductions.
Right.
We did not.
Intentionally.
Right.
Because we kind of said it depends on where the courts are at the time. We wanted the flexibility to use it to make, you know.
Because isn't that what this is?
It is. And I wasn't on the, you know, the WAFM group, so I wasn't part of those discussions. But when I'm trying to look at this, and everyone should realize I have no horse in the race in the future. It just seems like there is an opportunity here to kind of look at this revenue shortfall differently than we look at some of the other things that we're looking at.
But I guess my question
is isolated.
My question is, should this be a discussion about what to do with reductions going forward, or should mm-hmm. this be relevant to the 22.2?
This one.
Yeah, it would be.
We should take those up as they arise.
I think so.
Yeah.
It depends on where we are.
Well, I don't know. Okay.
I think it's relevant to the 22.7, but it does create a precedent going forward if in future years we don't get sufficient coverage for decreased revenues.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. I mean, I think it is tough because on the one hand, if we would want to isolate any discussion to revenue shortfall, which is different than a cut, I think. I mean, we're talking here that the fund is just losing water out of the bottom of it. It's not that they said we're going to reduce your allocation by $20 million.
It's also
in effect, though, when we raised all of the problems of that, and I mean, even when we, back in March of last year when we prepared the BCP, we said publicly that not funding this is an allocation reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And that was stated when we had our budget advisory committee in San Francisco. We said not fully funding this result in allocation reductions. And that was our public statements at the legislature. Not funding this is a cut in operational funding. So, yes, they didn't take away the general fund, but the impact is still the same. And we were saying that publicly, that would be what courts would
and that's what
have to do.
Angers me or disturbs me or something is this perception that we've given you $100 million, but we've cut you by $20 million, we're not covering. And so, really, the net growth to the branch is the difference. Yet we're treating it as though it's what we're doing is buying right into the governor's narrative that says, I gave you $100 million or
what did you do with it?
Whatever it is, without recognizing what the real true value of that increase was.
I think there's a beauty.
That was often on off.
Yeah,
you know,
and repeatedly last year.
You staff forward and you expedite, you know, us moving courts further through WAFM without giving us any real money. And we recognize that we needed real money to continue to march down. And so it allows some manipulation on how they move us through WAFM. And so that's my concern, is looking, you know, standing back and looking at it. from that perspective, and you know, does it really go to the intent? You know, it's hard to fathom that they're going to give us money over here and not make sure we're whole over here. That's what's happening.
But this is the way we change the narrative too. Is if we talk about this $22 million and call it what it really is, which is an allocation reduction, instead of rolling it into some greater, you know, funding package, I think that we actually and if we that pain as a separate sort of discrete item. And I agree with you, Jake. I think every year that we have a revenue shortfall that does not get some kind of recognition, full recognition in the budget, that's an allocation reduction. It's a hard dollars not coming into the branch, out the door kind of a reduction. I think there's beauty in that because we're not talking about the vagaries of whether this court is more efficient than that court or whether this court's paying more benefits than that court. You know, all of those, it's a purely mathematical problem. We expected X dollars, we got 22.7 fewer dollars in that category, and it's not our fault. So
I'm trying to understand the concept on the arithmetic, and I'm trying to flip it in my mind. So let me put the question this way. When WAFM was being created, I guess the assumption was that there's a certain amount of revenue that also comes into the trial court trust fund in addition to the general fund money,
mm-hmm.
and that is a given. And the Department of Finance knows that if that amount turns down, then they've got to make up that difference to keep the branch whole.
Mm-hmm.
And historically, that was always done, is my understanding.
How about, there hasn't been this kind of historic decline in the trial court trust
okay.
fund, so there hasn't been a need to ask for revenue stabilization funding, so
okay. What happened historically when those fees went up? Did that just add to the amount of fund balance in the TCTF, or was that distributed to
those revenues were in place of the general fund was reduced as a reduction to our transfer, and we replaced some in a small part, but still an important part of approximately $120 million of revenues to minimize the cut impacts on the trial courts.
So let me try restating what you said, make sure I understand it. So in the years in which those fees went up, the legislature would say, therefore, we need to give you less than the general.
No, it started with, we're in a budget crisis, and we're going to take $200 million out of your budget.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came back and said, well, we're going to transfer money from this construction fund.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to redirect money from the trial court trust fund for one purpose to this purpose, and we're going to ask the various groups to support revenue increases that can minimize the cuts.
Got it.
So the governor's budgets would reduce the general fund, and then by the time the Budget Act was signed, there would be a plan to try and minimize the impacts of those cuts.
Uh-huh.
And that's been the problem, is that we don't have. So we got the cuts down, but then the governor increased them, and we don't have any more solutions
uh-huh.
for those cuts. So you have all experienced,
uh-huh.
you know, of almost $400 million in ongoing budget allocated
right.
reductions.
But to Judge Good's point, I think the other part of that is, I think what you're asking is, if revenues increase, do they lower the amount of money they get us so that we always stay at this assumed
right.
level?
And where we are right now is that they've contributed $30.9 million in the current year.
Mm-hmm.
If we get back more than that in terms of the revenue, they would have reduced that support to keep us at that level.
Oh, so it is like
where we are now because of this. Their statement is, we're assuming your projection is correct. If you were, if it actually comes in better, then we're going to reduce so that you're no worse off.
Uh-huh.
So you're right about that, but it doesn't go historical. It's sort of right
that's
now this
way,
problem.
That's a better way of answering the question. So it's assuming then that the branch is going to, the trial courts are going to get, I'll make up a number, $2 billion. And some part of that, the largest part of that is going to come from the general fund. Some part of it's going to come from fees, but if fees go up, then general fund goes down just to stay at the $2 billion.
Currently, yeah, because of the fact that they've provided revenues. But not enough. We actually did reduce operational funding because the 22.7 was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you said you were asking two questions, math and
just, I'm just trying to...
because what we're really talking about is whether or not we allocate the full amount under WAFM and then apply the reduction, or whether we subtract it first and then allocate it under WAFM.
And last year we did it separate.
Yeah.
Right. We allocated the full amount and then handled the shortfall separate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Allocated
after. The after. And so the impact is.
Probably 6 on
that.
And to be honest, I think the reason that we didn't spend more time on the intricacies of how
it
could work is because we were focused on we're going to advocate for being restored.
Yes. You got
to get to the next step of, well, should we really?
It would be nice to see what it looks like, you know, what we have now, and what happened if we built 22.7 off the top.
I actually did it.
Do you want to pull it up?
You want me to print it out for everyone?
Yeah.
Or project as well?
You can project it up.
Project
and then post it to the website so we'll all get a copy later. Or do you want to write on it?
I like to write on it. I like to question them about
you probably don't like e-readers. You don't like to read your book on the iPad or that.
I like to do those in grade school. Okay. I'll memorize the words. I want to look at the
and we'll post it to the website after the meeting.
So we need to give them a couple minutes to do that?
Yeah.
Do you want to go to the next slide?
Yeah.
Pendant?
Yeah. Let's, item 3.
Here for the item.
No. Stephen, what are you printing again? Are you printing the spreadsheet that we talked about? Or what are you printing exactly?
I'll show you what the difference will be.
Yes.
Yeah.
By county. By county. Yeah. No, I think that's important because someone else is going to make
I can't tell.
Okay, so we'll go on to number 3, which is the funding methodology subcommittee. This is to start preparing for what would be in our work plan for next fiscal year. I recommend the committee and elsewhere. So it is on page 11, the last page. Yep. So this was our work plan from back in September with a couple of updates. So one was to look at complex litigation cases, that's been addressed by the IMF review, so no longer part of ours, so
okay.
If there's a section, I think we would consider that.
No objections.
So then our items for 14 and 15, this fiscal year, we're going to look at allocating the reduction. So what we're talking about now. Oh, I'm sorry. The need for staff, for additional staffing in multiple locations, we were also looking at last spring, which was completed.
Yep.
Sorry. Then in 14-15, looking at how to allocate reductions, we talked about, again in September, and as we just talked about here, the decision was, no, we don't want to have a standard plan because we don't know what the exact reduction is going to be or what's tied to it or what's going on. So really that has been completed with the result of no action. Take those as they come. Number 2 was looking at the employer-paid portion of employee retirement costs. That essentially was in the September meeting discussed as part of the benefits recommendation that is now going to council next year. That group, as it relates to WAFM, decided that no, really there's this progress is being made separately through other functions, so there isn't necessarily a need to make it any specific action within a WAFM itself. So it was reviewed, discussed, but also a no action as it relates to the model itself. And then the third item that we had this year was the Defense Corporate Council funding model, which also was at the last draft corporation advisory committee meeting, with that recommendation going to the council last week, so it appears, unless there's objection, that we address the items on our work this year. Some were no action, but at least did review them. Concerned with that statement? Okay. So then for 15-16, what we had talked about back in September is what are we going to look at next year was looking at the technology funding with the assistance of both the CITMF, which is the Court Technology Officers, the Judicial Council Technology Committee, and potentially CTAC. The idea there and the concept is that when we built WAFM, we looked at what the expenditures were by all of us to determine what was the operating expenses, and embedded in that is technology. But that looked at what was sort of an average for everybody. It didn't necessarily say what is a court, take Orange County. So, Orange County has a lot of great technology that's in place, but that technology costs money. And so they that was in their OE&E, but we took an average. So some other court may not have sufficient within that number to create that infrastructure with what we're allocating. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. We've never did that analysis or took a look at it. So that is offered something for 15-16. Honestly, that is going to be a – I'm not sure how we accomplish that necessarily, but that's on the work plan.
Jake, yeah. I think another piece of that, my recollection was that your costs aren't even year to year. So you need to replace your servers every 4 years. So every 4 years, the fourth year, you suddenly need four times as much money, so to speak, and nothing in the in-between years. And Wacom doesn't really accommodate that, especially now with a 1% cap. I mean, you could have before by just storing money in a reserve and then spending it on the fourth year, but now we can't do that. So maybe that would be another thing to look at as a piece of it.
So that was one, and then the other one was looking at self-help funding. So just as a reminder, the way that self-help funding works now is that self-help is included in the resource allocation study model. So the WAFM need is calculating self-help needs. All right, Leah? But the way the funding works is that we all do receive some funding out of the IMF and TCTF also, right? There's two pieces that come as a separate allocation that has just been sort of historically there based on legislation in the past, and we sort of continued it on. And so the idea here was to say, well, is that do we want to continue to do it, or does that money just need to go into the main pot? So, you know, trying to sync up that revenue stream with how WAFM is calculating self-help. Anyway, so this was the idea. We never really looked at that or evaluated how we wanted to go about that, so to have that work plan for next year. What we talked about previously is that
is asking Blackboard that, is there some chance we're going to get dedicated self-help money, so to speak, this year? I mean, that was talked about. If somebody said, oh, let's put $20 more million into self-help.
What appointed dependency council has been talking
about. That's different, but I thought there was some discussion about self-help, too. No, it's completely new.
Martin's advocacy.
It was last year.
Last year.
They were talking about allocating money. They were going to say, you know, we want to control where it goes. There was some discussion about...
Yeah, but
not this year.
Now, nothing now that came out of
the reason I'm asking is maybe we need to hurry up if something's going to happen. But if nothing's going to happen, no big deal.
The hearing last couple of weeks ago about dependency council.
Yeah. Okay.
So those two are the items that are on for next year. I'm going to run through the other ones that are in 16-17.
Wait.
Just for information that we can.
Can I add one thing? It's my understanding there will be a 1058 working group also with FAMJU. Wouldn't that be next year, Judge Earl?
Let me pull it up, because it's on the council agenda for next week.
That's my understanding. They'll be putting together a working group for the 1058 and come back next year with a recommendation on what they're going to do.
Yeah, it's an old 2004, just like everything else.
Right.
It's not posted yet, so I don't know. So Mary Beth is probably more familiar with it than I was.
So it is recommending a working group made up of FAMJU members, WAC members, I think probably members of this group, the Act probably, and so I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly, but it was pretty inclusive working group. They wanted to get it together.
So, Gerald, have we identified now, do we think we've identified all of the areas of funding that are based on an historical model? 1058 just came up, and I think that was FAMJU had sort of always had jurisdiction over that, and they realized that it was historical funding. I mean, are there other things like that? Do we know?
There probably are.
You mean like the court-appointed council, that as an issue, and any other allocations? I'm trying to think about when we went through calling all of the TCTF allocations.
Are there unique funding that are based on historical? That would be sort
or
of
something different.
Or
I'm trying to think. We have
grants would be all that category. So
what other
bills? Civil case coordination, which is more of a reimbursement than a grant. There's family law information centers. There's court-appointed special advocates, and there's equal access. Equal access, though, is funded through revenue, not through dedicated funding source.
It is a dedicated
funding.
It's a dedicated funding, but instead of it,
and
it's revenue.
Fluctuating.
Yeah.
Can we pull it up?
CASA?
CASA is not in Waffle.
Not in Waffle.
No, but there's a family and juvenile went. They just looked at that recently, and they went through a new RFP process for people to bid and get funding for Quarterfinite Council. Or, I mean, CASA, not Quarterfinite Council, for CASA. That was pretty recent.
But I think Judge Kuhlberg's point is that perhaps we need to look at those other funding models for certain funds and make sure that we think that they're allocated fairly.
Or is there a way to capture them in Waffle? That funding gets thrown in because we now capture the workload as calculated there.
Or sort of characterize things at least. Like, I mean, so grant funding where you apply for a grant, I think that's one thing. But, you know, 1058 was different, right? That was everybody does it, and so how do you decide how much money each court gets? That, I think, is a little bit different. So it might be worthwhile just trying to characterize these various things. Add that to whether there are other areas that ought to be looked at.
Universal, we can make sure we've looked at everything and put everything on the left side or the right side. And if it's the right side, then it explored. If it's on the left side, then it's clear it's a reimbursement for something and unique and makes lots of sense.
So I would add the 1058 on the 1516 because it's going to happen.
The reallocation formula for the Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator Program.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the recommendation is to have something back by December.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
1516.
Yeah, it would be
1516. In terms of putting together a list of other similarly funded and reviewing those, is that I think we should do that in 1516 too if we had time.
I would have the judicial council staff start with
put together a list.
Yes, yeah.
So whatever Colin just rattled off, there aren't many left.
No, I think that's it. I think we've hit them all. Self-help, dependency council, 1058.
I can't have this PDF.
Self-help, the 2% in my progress, all that stuff. That we're not talking about those amounts.
No, we are.
We're talking about.
So the way it works right now is you take the funding, we actually add the self-help dollars back in when you look at your funding towards WAFM, but it's coming through a historic grant of how much we got. So the funding model is saying you need who knows how much for self-help because it's all embedded, right? So you might be able to help. It's in there as a number. And then we're giving funding that's historic funding towards that, just adding it in as a lump sum. So the question was, the reason why I didn't, well, if we still want to do that, those are coming from dedicated funding sources. Is that the appropriate way to handle it or not? So that's just why it's been on the list because we knew we were getting funding for it and, of course, spent money how they wanted to, but the question is, what's the best way to do it?
I guess.
Given there's three different streams.
Right. I should say on the technology funding stream, I wasn't picking on Allen to pick on Allen because the other piece we knew when we were looking at LA, Orange County, is that there are also things that I don't want to get into the politics of V3, but weren't being spent by Orange County when we looked at that average OE&E either. So in some cases, you're going to say, well, Orange County has a lot of spending on technology. Well, there might be a few things weren't.
We have to talk about
V3? No, we don't. I'm just saying. I think it sounds like Alan was spending a whole bunch of money that I wanted to acknowledge money that wasn't being spent. And we're trying to. When we did this initially for the operating expenses, we didn't say, here's how much. In order to. So, for example, we have requirements for security over our network and all the rest of that. Well, how much is that? And then how much would it be if you have a state-of-the-art case management system? Not state-of-the-art. You have a next generation case management system with e-filing and the ability to see things online and do e-service, right? Yeah. Well. We want to get so what is that amount, right? We didn't identify that. So the idea here is to look at that along with the other technology groups to say, well, how much did we include initially in OE&E for technology? Would that be enough for a court really to operate the technology we want to so we can isolate, well, what's that difference?
Well, recognizing the pie size won't change.
Right.
You know, it's an interesting discussion because if you slice it for technology bigger, then the operations is going to get smaller. So it's really which slice are you looking at? And when you automate
a function, you do have a savings on the staff side. So I think it's a discussion we have to have, but I think we have to recognize it's just a matter of how you're making the slices.
So that's on next year, unless we want to not do it next year. So the other ones we still have outstanding that currently are slated for 16-17 is the impact of IMF revenue on a course based budget, which may not be relevant anymore.
I think it's gone.
Yeah.
I think we could take that off.
There isn't any.
There isn't. I mean, right. It's gone.
So we can take that out. And then the other one, page here, 1058, which we've now moved up, and then the other two relate to local revenue, we'll call it that, as a general group, looking at the impact of civil assessments and impact and application of county MOEs are both slated for 16-17.
I suspect civil assessments are going to get some visibility sooner than that.
What makes you say that? Who's looking at it?
Yeah.
The recent articles and things that is getting visibility with respect to how the courts are benefiting from the civil assessment. You know,
you're talking about license holds. That's what the article.
Right, the license holds and civil assessments are in there.
I read the article. I didn't see it. I saw license holds. I didn't see anything about civil assessments.
No, maybe it's a report. There's a report called a non.
I have not read the.
Under the rubric of, you know, if you fail to appear, it's going to cost you $300.
Yeah, there have been some recently yesterday. So
I think it's going to be part of this whole larger issue.
It's not our problem report, and it's focused on California and our processes here.
But I guess, Mary Beth, I would separate that. There may be a policy thing that comes out of that, but this was related to how do civil assessments relate to WAFM.
Well, I think that's going to go that – well, I don't know. I can't.
Then we'll find out.
Where to go, but I think it might put some pressure on us because it will bring visibility to this.
And the way it could come up in the legislature is through this amnesty program bill. I mean, there's the alternatives to the amnesty program in terms of what we collect and what we recover from collections and that kind of stuff could start getting at this.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, remind me, I believe that 4 and 3 are related, but I'm not really sure that there's much to gain to even talk about 4. Because those are things that were negotiated with the county at the time, and I'm not really sure that we would have any ability to change them. It would, you know, I don't really know what our intent was there. They're related because bills were cut that go both ways, but what exactly were we hoping to gain from
the Does the MOE money go into the trial court trust fund?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's where it comes up.
I know, but do you see any chance that really we would try to renegotiate the MOEs with the county?
I don't know where it would go, but this is the list. This is the remaining list of parking lot items that were identified when WAFM was first created.
But don't we want to talk about whether we want to do them? Is that what we're doing right now?
Yep. Sure.
My question is the context in which it was brought up.
I'm questioning number 4. 4 was brought up because it was related to 3 because
they're tied. So because some courts don't have the ability to
just undo
to collect civil assessments.
That's right. No, that's exactly right. And that's because of the arrangement.
Like it. They don't just keep it.
That's right. And so, you know, I see that they're tied, but I'm not really sure there's anything we could do about 4, and we wonder if we should just recognize that we can't renegotiate it and still look at 3. So I don't know.
I'll tell you what complicates it 4, and I think probably the death knell of 4, is that those MOEs were a tripartite agreement with the courts, the counties, and the Department of Finance.
That's right.
And
State Department of Finance?
Uh-huh.
Yes,
they were.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they were.
That was huge fight.
And then there were months and months of intense
arguments
about the levels and what was in, and it was almost negotiated on a county-by-county basis.
To try
to upend all of that,
yeah.
I think would be near to impossible.
I think it is, but it is.
I heard about it in Riverside. It almost ended the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it was ugly. So I'm not sure there's a lot to gain from discussing 4.
Is the question under 4 whether to try to renegotiate the deals or to understand what they are and how that impacts court funding and therefore WAFM?
Which I know. And that's exactly.
Well, 3 and 4 in our county are tied a little bit together.
They're all tied.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I don't know what the impact of 4
is, but I don't read four as saying let's go renegotiate these employees. It's a question of how we should understand the impact on walking of this other stream, and I don't mind looking at it and trying to understand it.
Well, I know how it was brought up because it was part of our original WAFA meeting. It was brought up as it relates to three.
Yes.
That in San Bernardino and Riverside, there's a difference, and they were the two counties used.
Right.
That Riverside keeps dollar for dollar, and San Bernardino loses $7 million of the first amount they keep, 7.2 if I recall. And the difference is, though, the deals that were cut with the counties at the time that I don't think we can ever change. So I don't mind looking at three, but I'm not sure what value there will be to look at four because of the...
Well, I agree with Judge Good. I think it wasn't about renegotiating. It was about understanding the impact of civil assessments and that it's complicated by MOEs.
It may not work out, but... Is it harm to look at both?
See, in its very essence, the MOE simply determines how much money the county is going to give the state.
Yeah.
The secondary piece was what the counties considered to be their revenue that they were would be available to fulfill that mandate
that they would
establish.
That's right.
And so, you know, DOF's position will basically be, I don't care what you do with, you know, the split of money, but the county's going to owe whatever they agreed to going forward because that's the seed money for the trial court trust fund. And there was never a direct dollar-to-dollar connection, and if there were, it's proceeded over nearly 20 years between the MOE and local court funding. I mean, and so I think maybe we can talk about three and maybe how we do things going forward, but I think the MOE piece is way beyond our scope. I just don't know how we did it.
I'm wondering if we take off four, but just understand that when we do have a discussion of civil assessments, we're going to have a discussion about it.
That's right.
It's going to implicate the MOEs, yeah.
Right. Well, so that people don't misunderstand
right.
What we mean by that.
And where that will come into play is if we determine that there's some portion of civil assessments that's been being used to offset our WAFA need, in some court, they are not going to have the same opportunity as other courts.
Well, and $51 million, I believe, was the number total that goes back to the counties, $51 million for all 58 counties of the civil assessment.
Yeah. Well, I'll get right. 789.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. More of that.
So should we do that? We'll take it off as
an
independent item, but understand it's going to be part of the discussion for civil assessment.
Yeah. Do you want to add the word MOE up above just to make sure that
well,
we all
I
know?
I don't see how we're going
to... I'm concerned for reasons I don't quite
whatever.
Remember.
Okay. MOE discussion, I think that should totally fail.
Yes.
I agree with Mike.
Okay.
You know,
but we'll talk. We'll look into
yeah.
it. I mean, we're going to have to consider it.
It's a $51 million obligation
well, I know.
That the state...
But
if we're in state courts, it's the most counties.
But part of this is when the original group talked about civil assessments, we talked about how some courts are collecting more and some courts are not.
Right. Those
okay.
Are
okay.
Philosophically.
And what should we do in order to provide incentive for courts
right.
to collect more civil assessments, but then offset by, well, what's this particular MOE with those courts have with their county?
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't remember that because I remember citing with courts that have a philosophical difference feeling that they have that right. Because civil assessments are in lieu of a warrant.
Right.
And if you're in a small county where the sheriff still serves people, your judge may say, I'm not going to do that. I'd rather have them serve.
Yes.
And so to me, that's a judicial discretion thing. And so I'm not sure I would ever be in favor of saying someone, we should encourage them to do it that way.
I thought we had in, and it was like, you know, maybe there should be a level of, I think this is, that, you know, you need to meet this level of collecting civil assessments, and if you don't.
There was one person of our committee who felt very strongly
about
it. And there were some who did not.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it was about. And it does start to get to this delicate issue.
Yes,
that about
very
talking about that. Is that really what we want to be doing philosophically? I mean, when you step back from it, I mean, we end up here talking about, you know, we're talking about money because that's what we have to be focused on right now. And there are other implications from, like Sherry's saying, if you're going to get a warrant, you're going to get a $300 civil assessment or, you know, as we like to talk about, don't, you know, you committed, you sped, and then you committed a second crime by not showing up and got 300 more, and then please, hopefully, you did not go set up a payment plan and not pay that because then you got 300 more. I mean, that's the way the system is, it can work, right? But that's different. That's philosophical, not the revenue. I mean, this was all about the revenue and how does that revenue get allocated.
But the other piece, too, that we're losing here, and I'm sorry because this is something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about, mostly in Riverside, where I kept dollar for dollar and increased it significantly, is it takes a, it's a cost recovery. This is not gravy. It's a cost recovery, and it's not included in RAS because either it's our collection people that are doing it.
There's parts that are included?
Parts? No.
No,
it's not.
Collections.
No.
Forthwith collection.
Absolutely.
Right. But in fairness, this is a 1617. I mean, right?
I know. 1617. My point is, those who are not in the room, it's a cost recovery. It is very expensive to implement. It is not part of RAS. And so we have to make sure that we understand, and it's a philosophical decision.
Well, and not only that, but I know this is a conversation for a year and a half from now, but still, from the judge's perspective, when I have to look at someone and say, I'm going to charge you an extra $600 for that speeding ticket, I'd really rather issue a warrant. It's much easier.
Enhanced collections is not part of RAS.
So there's a lot of different reasons why you do it one way versus the other, but...
So
the whole civil assessment issue is complicated. It's complicated by the courts that keep all the money, the courts that keep none of the money, the courts that keep some of the money, and then it's further complicated by how courts have committed the revenue stream for that money already in their budget. They've tied it up in long-term contracts. They've tied it up in all kinds of ways.
Or it covers their costs for implementing it.
I mean, way back when trial court funding passed, a bunch of courts had already implemented civil assessment and had whatever cost-sharing arrangements they had. A bunch of courts like mine hadn't done it at all. So when I implemented it, I told the county, I'm keeping the whole thing. You know, that's just the way it goes because then it really was my revenue. Mm-hmm. So we cannot, with a stroke of a pen, sort of undo 25 years of history of civil assessment.
That's why it's... 1617. We kept pushing it because we
Judge
needed
to. Judge Sterl, she would be chair of the committee.
I
<Not
was.
Darryl.
laughs> Can't go on the indefinite list.
Yeah, okay. So then there were indefinite, where we really hadn't defined where.
Number one, I think that Darryl said was the only person in the world who likes that issue. So if that is true, strike it if I'm the only one in the world who likes that idea.
The indefinite?
No, the evaluated impact of failure provided services.
Do everybody understand what that means?
Services that they provide to more courts so they don't have those services.
Yeah, right.
I thought we were
larger.
So it's indefinite. Number two was including unfunded costs, at least specifically related to courthouse construction, is out there as indefinite because it's a something that
is not there.
And then three was one that I thought we resolved, but we've left it on the indefinite list, which is the funding of new judgeships because courtrooms, you know, if we ever get new judgeships, there is a funding complement that comes with it, and so you're getting a funding complement, but those but that
no, that's why it would be subtracted out.
Get the dollar.
I'm looking forward to the statewide distribution of
this. this was a member that's not on the committee anymore.
Yeah, I would strike it.
I don't know
three.
If anyone thinks it's still appropriate.
I'd strike it.
Yep.
But with the RAS already gives the kids after the filing, you're not getting judgeships.
Right.
So if you get the judgeships finally,
you don't get.
You already got the staff.
That's right.
That's why I'm okay.
It's going to be more than 100%.
I'm not going to commit to that as a. I understand what you're saying.
At the state level,
move them closer to the law.
We're still asking for the funding number. We're just not necessarily part of the need already.
I just want to make sure.
No. So they give us 10 new. Okay, let's talk through this first.
You already get the staffing components.
But I'm not funded.
100% funded.
Exactly. I'm only 5% funded.
Then you'll have 154 judges and 65% staff like the rest of us.
So let me ask that question then, though. If we got 10 new judges and staff goes with it, that would change whatever court got that staff. It would change their funding needs.
because they've got one.
No, no, you've totally disconnected.
No, not their need, but they would have.
Anyone on the phone?
Here's my question. Are we asking, though, at a state level for some funding complement?
Yes.
Not that it trickles down to the trial court.
Yes, but then money comes in.
Yeah.
Well, the knows that. That's why they don't give us.
Chris, if you'd have gotten 3 judgeships and $40 million that went along with it, that's what the old days were all about.
That would be $400.
Well, awesome. Did
so now you get the 40 judges and...
If you get the $40 million, I think we've got to still get the money to support that. But that's got to go into the pot, the Waffen pot, because
it's
totally disconnected.
It's untied intentionally.
Tied their exact number of things. Filings drive judges, filings drive brass.
But
you don't get it both ways.
Yeah. But we're still most...
But we'll all be equal by then, because there won't be any new judgeships until we're...
I'm talking about that camera.
So we reached the end of the list, but are there other things you think we should add to the list?
So did we agree to strike ring?
I put delete.
Okay, okay. And did we... Okay.
Are we striking one? Under indefinite?
Well, I'm happy to do that. You're right, it was my thing. It still irritates me, but I'm happy to let one go.
Just for what it's worth, I would also vote to keep it.
Okay. We'll keep it there then.
Let me ask a question.
It's indefinite.
And I apologize, I don't have the IMF stuff in front of me.
Were there services in the IMF, and I think it would dovetail with this, where either courts were receiving services under the IMF or there are AOC-provided services out there that now maybe have to be absorbed by that court and are going to kind of impact either the RAD or the OEC? No.
They're all special work.
There were things like HR investigation.
Discretionary, exactly. They're all discretionary work.
Yeah.
But you see, like, for instance, when we start at the V3 and the thing, that discussion, if that's not currently in the, we already talked about that.
Yeah, that's not currently in the OEC.
And I think one will eventually go away because of
So
I think, Mary Beth, the more complicated answer to your question is that on average those costs are included already in the OE&E.
Yeah, they are.
But to some extent the OE&E value we used was slightly depressed because some expenses were being paid by the IMF.
Right. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Which is why the item on there for technology is on there. We didn't factor in that amount that was being paid for these programs.
Right.
So it would have had some slight depression on that OE&E cost per person. How significant that is, we won't know until we look at it. Right. So that's why it has been on there as an agenda item for us to look at. But we also knew it's going to be really complicated because you have two ways to look at it. You look at what you're spending, or you look at what does it really cost for a court to create their server farm, and have the right security. What is the case management system cost? Server, how you factor in the fact that you're not buying servers every year, you're buying them every 3 to 5 years depending on the server, but you no longer have a way to put that into a replacement fund, which may be something we'd try to address.
Mm-hmm.
Even separately, maybe if you don't want to do reserves, so we at least have a replacement fund, like most people do. But whatever,
that's not our issue.
So anyway, yes, Mary, that was my long answer.
Okay.
All right. So is there anything to Judge Earl's question? Anything else we want to add for next year? So otherwise, if not, what we have next year is the technology issue, moving up the 1058 item to next year. Looking at all the funding sources and determining if there's other allocation models that we haven't looked at yet. And
what about the self-help? Did you just
and self-help. So next year is technology, self-help, 1058, and looking for any other items we have forgotten. And 1617 would have on it civil assessments and indefinite when item one remains and item two remains.
So what is? That's enough.
You got to take action on that.
It says action. I don't know. I move approval of whatever Jake said. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Who was the official second there? Was it?
It was Debbie Norrie. We've amended the work plan.
So is there an item two on our agenda? We have item one and item three and item two.
There's no materials for item.
There is.
Two? Well, we were going to come back.
Item two? Yeah.
There was a reduction.
Revenue
shortfall.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So we'll go back to that.
We'll circle back on that now.
Okay.
That's how we were able to finish item three. Kind of.
Go for it, Stephen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One page. Okay. So for those on the phone, if any of you have still hung in there, going back to item number two.
Yeah, so it's okay.
Two pages.
I'll give you a few minutes to go before I try to explain it, or do you want me to explain it?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, sorry. So I've developed two scenarios, columns A through E versus scenario B, columns F through I, and then J subtracts A, B from A. So if you look at, we'll look at Alameda as an example. So in column A, B, and C, you've seen these before. This is what the adjustment would be if we allocated 90 points. Actually, this is a 90.06. It says 90.6 at the top, but really 90.06. That'll be adjusted upward. The WASM adjustment is 30%. It's incremental, not the cumulative. Incremental in 16. Allocation, reallocation of the new funding floor adjustment. And then you apply the 22.7 using the current methodology, the methodology that was used this year.
Column D is the way it happened for the current year.
That's right.
Yes.
Column D is.
So for Alameda, their total adjustment of 15-16 would be a negative $1.38 million. Okay, that's scenario A. Now, if instead we reduce the WAFM allocation not by 22.7, instead of allocating 90.6, we would allocate 67.36. That's the situation you're getting B. So if you look at column F and A are the same. That doesn't change because that's just the incremental allocation at 30%. These numbers don't, A and F are exactly the same. What changes is what is G versus B. Because now we're allocating 67.36 million instead of 90.06 in column B. And that's the major change. The funding flow does change too because of calculation, so that changes a bit as well. So then you see the total for Alameda. Actually, the reduction is less. Their overall reduction is less if you were to allocate the 67.3 instead of 90.6 and then the 22.7 separately. And in general, as if you look at the reallocation, the ratio, basically courts that get less back for every dollar, they're the ones who do better because you reallocate less. That's generally the reason why they benefit from scenario B because there's less of them, give up less money. And so the courts that have a reallocation ratio of greater than one who always gain from reallocation, their allocation is less under scenario B.
I just don't remember. In column D, where you were separating the 22.7 million, the reduction was allocated based on what? The percent. The historical percentage, though?
Sure.
I don't remember.
So. Like the
2%. Oh, the 2%. That's right.
How the 2% was allocated.
Sorry.
Pro rata minus security.
Got it. Very good, Jessica.
Okay. So if you look at, I think what's important to note, if you look at the state's severely underfunded courts like Kern, Kern,
Riverside, San Bernardino.
Yeah, Fresno. The difference for Kern is a little over 100, 129. The difference for San Bernardino, 221,000. Riverside, 161,000. And then if you look at the courts that are on the other end of that, so Siskiyou, they go from a 241,000 reduction to 14. Oh, I'm sorry, 226. So it
negative.
Actually pick up 15,000.
Yeah, negative.
Yeah, the negative
good.
In the column J means that the court gains that money.
Right.
Positive number means they lose that money.
Right.
Say it again.
So if you have like SIFU, it's a negative 14.97. It means
that
they gain that money.
Right. That helps.
It helps them. But the courts that have a positive number in that last column lose that money.
Like Kern.
Right.
Yeah.
$5,600.
As opposed to $100.
Between, and that's the difference between these two columns. So one is the current, one would be if did it less the 22.7 and then only did it on that, they'd gain almost $6,000.
Okay, so the final.
The final, right.
Can I seek clarification? On column J, if we use that, if we subtracted the 26.7 out of the one-time money, we're overdone, finished. We never have to talk about it again, right?
As we say that we're going to always do this forevermore with the 22.7.
Right. I mean, it's a one-time thing. We're done.
Right.
Zlatko, the original WAFM of $1.44 billion was also predicated on that revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, if you now have reduced revenue, it's $1.42 million. Because the revenue base that was used to create the original number is now less. So without taking the $22 million off the top, we're getting hit three different ways because of the revenue shortfall. I mean, if you really want to do it right, you would reduce the original $1.44 billion to the new revenue stream number of $1.42 billion and then use that number going forward, which would be hugely complicated. And since we're talking about potentially a one-time issue, it would make more sense to handle it.
Well, I would move that we just subtract it and deal with it. The irritating part for me is I still don't think we should fund it. I go back to what we did last year, which is make them give us the money, you know? Once we fund it, it's over.
Were you at that conference? Yeah,
no. Yes, I was. Oh, I heard it. Okay, so that's...
It is.
I would move that we just subtract it, be done with it, get in the base. We've always counted on it. It never came.
Second.
I mean,
can we clarify exactly what that means?
It means
to do B, subtract it from the money and be done with it.
Yep.
So I want to be... Can I take a clarification? I know you have a second already from Kim, but is there a motion to subtract the $22.7 million revenue shortfall, not to subtract revenue shortfalls?
From what budget?
Just one time.
$22.7 million.
From what budget?
From 1516.
From the 90.6.
Well, from...
From whatever comes through the governor's budget.
Right.
For 1516.
From whatever the final...
Assuming it's still a deep fund? Assuming there's still new money.
Assuming we still get new money.
Exactly.
It's from any new money.
Wait and see what the governor's office does first.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's true, and we can always do this.
Yeah.
We could do this later.
We can make it effective in July.
Yeah.
July.
Right.
Just to this point earlier, it's. I'd like to see if they fund all or part of this,
right.
I think we ought to take advantage of
that. I agree.
Yeah.
So you withdraw on your motion, we'll address it.
Yep.
That's a fair question.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
I'm not optimistic.
I withdraw my second.
Well, but so we put it on the agenda for
the
May Council Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee meeting, which,
yeah,
if you haven't checked your phone yet, is May 18th.
That be after the May revise?
It will, but it will not come with any recommendation from us,
right,
unless we make one.
Could we do a phone call if we get to that point? Would that
between
be
May,
no,
this is the May 18th?
Yeah.
May
14th. That's not going to happen between Friday and Monday.
May 14th.
You think
the weekend
it'll come out the 14th.
Friday, I mean, it's Saturday or Sunday.
The May revise is supposed to come out.
And is there a governance requirement that a motion has to be made so it could be made at the Trial Court Budget Advisory?
It could just be.
So that's what I was.
Yeah, I agree.
Discussed it.
Yeah, just put this on the agenda for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can I ask a question, though? So the motion we're not going to do was just for the 1 year?
Just the 1 year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let me just say, you were saying that money is gone, but that it's not setting a policy precedent for how to handle
it. Exactly.
Push the base down and move on.
Right. We're done.
So we have to talk about 22.7.
It's not pushing the base down, just for that year.
Just,
yeah.
Yeah.
in.
Well,
no.
No.
It's a permanent.
It's a
cap. Yeah. See, this has been a permanent cut from 12-13.
Another reason to wait on that.
12-13.
Yeah, and I know we're not voting on anything today, but I still, this is chipping away at Waffle, and I just don't think that's the right approach to take. We'd still end up 38 percentage points off from the high to the low, and to chip away at it even more leaves us just farther behind.
So to Mike's point, though, I'm hearing this further, where he said if we do that, that we should change the base from 1.4 to 1.2.
1.4.
No.
1.42.
Let's think about that.
But that's what they're saying.
I mean, I'm not.
Maybe that is a better way to do it.
No.
Oh,
I'm not sure.
Well, a couple reasons. One, it doesn't actually do anything. Because your historical share of that percentage will be different.
My only point is you use the historical base that's no longer valid because they've reduced the amount of revenue that base was built on.
Yeah. So.
So, you get double penalized. You get money taken away that no longer exists.
You're just showing the algebra on that one.
Well, it'd be minuscule. Yeah, I mean.
Just
doing
it.
Well, it's premature conversation. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
Perhaps, so for the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, we should have a spreadsheet like that.
Like this.
Well, like this.
Plus, this will be posted on the materials.
Adjusting.
We're posting this on as materials to today's meeting.
Okay. Well, then that makes it easier. But you know, reducing the 1.422 minus 22 million.
Oh,
I don't know what that does. It changes everybody's percentage is what it does.
It doesn't change anyone's percentage.
Does it?
No, it's reduced.
It has to.
No. Because the only way to take the $22.7 million out of the base is to use a base on the historic funding share, which then means everyone's share is identical.
Yeah, that's right.
How do you take it off the base? If you even it out, it's going to be the same percentage.
That's right.
Problem. So, I mean, Mike's right. It does change how you're reallocating because that base is lower. But that part is correct, but your share is not different.
That's why I say way over the top.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. Steven's imagining the spreadsheet now in his head about how he goes back.
I know.
Change of base and then redo all of these and then have to lock the old ones.
I got your back, Steven.
So is there anything else anyone wants to raise? Any other ideas, thoughts? Seven days? That never happens.
When's the next thing?
Well, that's a good point because what's on our work plan is the two things for 16.
And looking at all the various other funding sources that you rely on historical funding to make sure you have anything.
Do we need to put the joint worker CAC work group with Sam Jews on here, or is that not really a funding methodology? It is.
It is.
So we have a recommendation to have that joint working group with Family and Juvenile Advisory Committee and our committee for court appointment. And the recommendation is that be completed by April of next year. Yep, so that should be on 15th.
There you go. But to the council by December, January, for implementation.
Ours is court appointed dependency council is presentation to the council by April of next year.
Oh, that one, yes.
And 1058 is, I think, the recommendation is December.
So, Kim, would you be willing to accept that amendment?
I will, yes. So I think we can ask, I'll ask Slotko if his folks can start to put together a list of all these other funding streams and see what we have so that we can look through them and see if we need to tackle them.
I think we have to get a second on the revision of the motion council.
There a second on a revision to the work that we're going to do in 1516?
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No. We probably need to get a meeting early in the fiscal year to identify who's going to work on these.
come back, because I think what we talked about last year is that really in order to get anything in, if we want to make a change to the funding model itself, we wanted to have that as a recommendation to the council by their March meeting, so the courts would have some time to plan, which means if we're going to look at these and think that they're done in a year, really it's 6 months, because we have to work on 6 month increments to get it to the council by March, so we all know as courts for planning, how's it going to change the model. So if we started in early, we met in July to inform the groups. Do you want to form that by email in advance?
By email, I think.
So then the request, I guess, would be just to think about which subgroup do they want to be on, looking at that form and have them all meet initially in January. Or, sorry, we can meet in July to form the groups in the
August.
July or August, I think it's January.
So I'm just thinking that we're all, you know, how we schedule our meetings is in time to take stuff to the Budget Advisory Committee, which is scheduled in time to take things to the council. So it's kind of a complicated process these days. I don't think we'll have anything. We'll have to have a meeting for the Budget Committee when? So June and then not till?
July 6th.
You've confirmed July 6th in San Francisco, right?
Okay.
It's changing, right?
Correct. It went out today. Mm-hmm. And so after that, we probably won't meet again until September, the Budget Committee.
Yeah, I don't think that we'd, I mean, unless we had, well, the revenue expenditure set in August, that could set up things for.
Okay. I guess I'll do a master calendar because we've got so much going on in terms of our stuff.
I know, I'd change some things.
Okay.
Probably the earliest.
October?
After we've done our July work.
For the full budget meeting?
Yeah. Don't quote me on that, though.
Right. Okay. Anything else anyone wants to raise? All right.
How do we get back to the airport?
Thank you for coming. We will end our meeting.